United Nations is welcoming the 5 billionth person alive in the world.
The White House today denies reports the U.S. sent weapons-related equipment to Iran as late as last month. The recent scandal at the PTL ministry are taking a toll on the credibility.
Kim Baker resigned.
Thank you. jam, jam, titty jam for me, yeah.
Hey, good afternoon, and welcome to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. And the number is 347-945-5229. It's 8 minutes after the hour, 12 noon, here on the 20th of August. I cannot believe how fast time is just going by. And I just want to know who you're listening to. You're listening to Guy. It's a very, very old group. Came out of the, I want to say it came out of the 80s, early 80s, mid-80s, somewhere around there. And it produced people like Teddy Riley and I'm trying to think who else. Aaron Hall and who else was in there? I'm not even say that, if I'm not mistaken, R. Kelly was in there too. I'm not quite sure. But great group that during that time. And those of us who remember those days remember who I'm talking about when I talk about Guy. And it was that was Teddy Riley's jam. It's open mic today. Jeff is not in studio with me. I'm by myself. So we'll just have a conversation about whatever comes up, comes out here. I don't know if we're going to, whatever you guys want to talk about. The number is 347-945-5229. Also, if you want to call locally, you can do that. The number is 330-781-9600. Personal responsibility is always on my mind. Talking about... I want to make sure that my guests know that, and when they call in, listen, make sure you guys are respectful one of another. We don't have idiots here. I try to tell Jeff not to call people idiots. We have people that have opinions. And when people talk about what they are in and what they're about and what's going on their mind, you know, everybody has a different opinion, but people need to respect the opinion of everyone else. That's what makes America so great. And when we learn how to do that, then we have actually accomplished something. What has happened is people have censored what people think and censored what people can say, and so there's no good open conversation and dialogue. And when you don't have good conversation and good dialogue, you actually have no outcomes. Solutions are solved through communication, and communication is a source. Open communication is a source of problem solving. And when you don't have that freedom, then you really don't have any problem solving. And that's something that we are losing here in America at large. South Carolina's calling in because I called him and told him that know-it-all Jeff, know-everything Jeff and know-it-all Mark won't be here today. And he said he'd call in and help me out. Because as you guys know, I don't know much of anything. So I have people that know more than me call in and hang out with me because that's what I call them, my friends. You know, I was talking to my mom last night, and we were talking about Henry Ford. And Henry Ford is the guy who started Ford Motor Company with the Model T Ford. And if I'm not mistaken, I've got to go back and look at his bio, but I do not believe he was a college graduate. He may or may not have been a high school graduate. He said, they said, don't you feel inferior because you don't have your degree? And he said, no, when I go out, I don't have something. I go out and find one that's better than me. And I think that's a great business model. I think that everyone should hire up. You don't hire down. Hiring down is just stupid. And I said we don't have stupid people out there. Hey, South Carolina, how you doing, honey?
I'm doing great today. It's still raining.
You doing good today?
Yeah, yeah. We're still having about 10 inches over for the month of August in rain, over the average.
I don't think we've had any rain.
Yeah.
We haven't had a whole lot of rain.
In July, we got, we're like 7 inches over. In June, we got like 6 inches. So it's been pretty wet here. But today, hopefully, the sun will come out and, you know, bet your bottom dollar that tomorrow will be sun.
Bet your bottom. You've been watching Soul Train. What?
I got a question for you.
What?
Just so you know, you're a student of the Constitution and law and.
If that's what you
want
to call it, okay, I'll take it.
My question is this: I thought when you passed a law and the president signed it, don't you have to follow the tenets of that law?
No. No.
Why not? You don't
because
have to follow
I don't like
the
it,
law, man.
No, because if I don't like it, I can change it.
But here's the thing. Isn't that against the law to do that? That's against the law to do that, isn't it?
Not today.
I thought Congress was the only one that had the power to do that.
They do.
So how
But your point is?
How is it that this law can be changed at the whim of the president?
They're not changing it. They're just amending it.
No, but Congress hasn't amended it yet. I haven't seen it.
They don't have
to. How can you do that?
You have to understand, the administration is the executioner of the law, and if he can't execute it, then he doesn't have to.
That doesn't make any sense.
It does today.
I bet Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, Ben Franklin, John Hancock, and all those guys are spinning, and they can roll it up, they're spinning in the grave.
They not spinning. Don't worry about it. We got this covered. See, if it feels good, do it. If you don't like it, too bad. You don't have to worry about it. We got this. Don't you know the rules?
Well, that's not the rules that I grew up with.
This is not the age of your grandparents.
You say this is not my grandparents' America?
Right. It's, you know, it's like this. You know, I would tell my mom, I said, well, listen, can I go? And she'd say no. And I said, well, you know what? Angie and Michelle are going. You know what she tell me? I ain't Angie and Michelle's mama.
And then Michelle's mama. Yep, I remember that.
You remember that? So now,
yep, I remember
when
that.
You look, you remember, have you heard that little saying? And I'd be like, but listen, Ma. But so everybody else is going, but I ain't everybody else's mama. I'm your mama.
Yep.
Well, this is not your administration. This is not your America anymore. So if you don't like it, leave.
Okay. So now they're gonna pick and choose what they want to do, and the rest of us are gonna be screwed.
Absolutely, because remember, I know what's best for you. The elitists have a mentality that says, "I know what's best for you."
I got to mute real quick. Hold on.
So when the people know that I know what's best for you, then it's like your parents, you know, and your government is now becoming your parent, and because the government is becoming your parent, then they know what's best for you. Then you don't have to worry about what you think you know or who knows what about what you know, because you don't have to know anything because the government is now your caretaker. That's what entitlement, that's what, you know, government overreach is all about. And so people need to understand that government overreach and government, you know, stretching out and taking care of you, they got this. They don't need your help. Government is God.
Well, the problem that I'm seeing, though, is the double standard. You know, you've got they held George Bush and his administration feet to the fire. This guy gets a pass, and it just bugs me that they're not calling him out on some of these constitutional issues. I don't get it.
What's your problem?
My problem is I want my America back.
See, that's what I talk about, you racist people.
You can call me racist all they want to. I want my country back.
What country? What country was never yours?
Ooh. Now, why do you want to say that, Tracy? This country was mine.
No, that's not what I heard. I know. No, they told me the other day the country was never mine. That was wrong.
Well, whose country is
it?
It was never yours.
That's the problem,
so,
South Carolina, and not being sarcastic any longer, but that's the problem. People don't realize that this is my country, and I have say over it. And because we have told people this is not their country, and because people don't feel as though they have ownership in the country, that's why you can hijack a country because you don't even know that you've been hijacked because I don't even know that it's mine.
Well, I don't quite understand it.
Yes, you do.
You're saying it.
Yes, you do. You understand
that. But you got to have a heck of a set of cojones to pull this off.
No, you don't. If you blind enough people, they won't know they can't see. You know, I mean, I don't know if it's everybody has their own fable, but it's like the elephant in the tree or the dog in the dog food in the chain.
Yeah.
If you desensitize me enough, I won't know that you have me in bondage. And what's happening is people are living free, thinking they're free, but in actuality, they haven't been free for years.
Yeah. So, in other words, it's all relative. You think you're free, but you're not free because they've lied to you and said, give you a definition of freedom, and that's not the right one. Is that what you're saying?
Correct. Because, see, free people don't depend on anyone else for their livelihood. And
like
we have
African American coming out of slavery.
But it's all of them. See, the African Americans were just a pilot program, but America at large, if you talk to people have no idea what freedom means and what it means to have what they call it, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness?
Yep.
People don't know what that means, and it's been hijacked. But it's been hijacked a long time ago when we gave everything over to someone else. And when we gave everything over to someone else and we gave them control over our lives and we became so dependent on everyone else. You know, I don't know if I said this yesterday, and I don't mean to be unsensitive to people who have gone through catastrophes, and I pray that I never go through one that I have to depend on someone else. But we have told people that if there's a catastrophe like a tornado or something that comes in, not only will we bail out your government, but we will bail you out individually. So you don't need insurances. You don't need to have anything because somebody else is going to take care of you.
That's a nanny state.
Absolutely.
When someone else is in charge,
I And Republicans are no different than Democrats. I mean, I understand that we want to make sure that people are taken care of. And don't get me wrong, people need to have something to hold on to. And the government should be there as an infrastructure. But what we've told them is, I'm not your infrastructure, but I am your structure. And that makes a difference. Infrastructure is support system, is foundational. Structure is what's built upon it. And what we've done is we've weakened the structure so the structure no longer stands on its own. 8440, your mic is on.
Hey, Tracy, it's AJ. Whenever you're home alone, you can always call me. I had no problem coming in.
AJ, you can't come in. You're getting ready to go camping.
Yeah, but I'm not till Thursday. I was available today.
You told me the other day was your last day.
Yeah.
Yep.
Home alone?
Because I didn't think you were going to be home alone.
I'm home alone.
You could have called me. Now I feel unwanted.
You're not unwanted.
But
I love you too. I love you too. And I miss you. But you're on with me now, just like South Carolina. And,
exactly.
And I'm just
how you
saying,
doing, South Carolina?
Doing pretty good.
Good. Hey,
Great, chime in.
I was just going to say real quick what you guys were talking about. I totally get what you're saying about what South Carolina was saying about wanting his America back. It's totally understandable. And I don't know what that America was, but I'm sure it was better than what we have now. I just wanted to say that.
It was an America in which people wanted. I mean, it wasn't a good thing to be on welfare. If you had to be there, fine. But everyone, that was not somebody's goal, was to be on welfare. There was a stigma attached to, you know, getting food stamps and so on and so forth. But nowadays, you know, it's like, okay, it's normal. You know, it was unheard of for someone to you know, have the government pay for their phone. I remember when they started vendoring out services up in, you know, the first time I ever saw it, I was up in Massachusetts. And here it is, this young lady, she didn't have a light bill, didn't have a water bill, she didn't have a gas bill, you know. The only thing she paid for was cable and her telephone because her rent was subsidized and she had so many kids, you know, there was no rent essentially for her to pay anyway. She was getting food stamps. And what did she start talking about? Having another baby so she can get some more money. Is that crazy?
Do you remember when people were ashamed to stand in line and get free lunch?
Yeah.
Do you remember the time that people where people were ashamed to go to the grocery store with a food stamp card, food stamp.
Yep.
And they tried
to
hide it.
Right.
It was worse than buying sanitary napkins.
Well, Tracy, I actually remember when you had to pay for your food stamps.
Huh?
They were 13 cents on the dollar. Yeah, I remember that. They were 13 cents on the dollar. You gave them. You get them $13, and they give you $100 worth of food stamps.
I didn't know. I don't. That's before my time.
Well, I am what 6 months older than you are.
Before my time, I don't know nothing about that one. But I do know that there was a stigma that came with it, and it wasn't a badge of honor.
Yeah.
And somehow we've gotten away from that, and somehow we have made people feel so comfortable in hand-me-downs that they are, or should I say handouts, that they are, they don't strive to come off the system and work for it. And that's not a good way to be, because we've told the next generation behind it that they don't have to work hard for it either. And that's why we are where we are right now.
There used to be a tenacity that people had, and a plot that people had in order to stay and have what they had. And, you know, and talking to Mike, you know, I find that he's got that, and he's had it for a long time, and he's still fighting with it. And I know other people that have that. Tracy, you have it. You know, Jeff's got it. Sticks has got it. But other people that I talk to, and some of the people that call the show, they don't have that tenacity. They don't have that. They're okay with settling for. And I'm not settling for nothing. Settling will keep you poor. And I'm not looking to be poor.
But again, going back to what I'm saying, people think that they're free and they don't have an obligation to those who actually take care of them.
Yep.
And that's not freedom. Freedom is when you're independent of the system. And our problem is everything that we have, including our churches, are dependent upon the system. And then we wonder why we can't get ahead. And the system will never let you be greater than they are as long as they own you. And as long as people are enslaved in their mind, the government will never allow them to get ahead. Hey, the number is 347-945-5229. I've got to take a break. You're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. Hey, you remember this song? We'll be right back.
Everyone faces challenges in their lives. Handling it on our own sometimes is too overwhelming, but Turning Point Counseling can help. Turning Point offers the highest quality, individualized, confidential behavioral health care. Our professional and caring staff can help you or your loved one get started on the road to recovery today. Turning Point Counseling, because behavioral health care is health care. Don't wait. Visit our website for more information or call today for care. Everybody faces challenges in their lives. Sometimes these challenges can be too much to handle on our own. That's where Turning Point Counseling can help for depression, anxiety, suicidal thoughts, drug and alcohol abuse and addiction, personality disorders, crisis intervention, and more. Turning Point also provides residential services in our Crisis Stabilization Unit for those who need inpatient care. Turning Point Counseling Services, helping you on the road to recovery.
Boardman Frame House Gallery, a professional frame shop and art gallery at the Mark Shopping Center in Poland at Routes 224 and 680. We specialize in original, limited, and antique lithographs of both renowned nationally published artists and local artists. We have over 30 years of award-winning custom design and archival framing. We give your artwork a unique presentation that enhances its value for life. Let your home or office express something individual and unique with a fine art limited edition print signed by the artist and numbered. You'll find many unique and affordable fine art editions. Visit us in the Mark Shopping Center. Find the Greenwich Workshop Catalog. And for any print or canvas you order, you get 50% off the frame for that fine art edition. Find us on Facebook or call us at 330-758-5795. That's 330-758-5795.
Your car will look brand new after a professional cleaning at Kingley Hand Wash and Wax. All work is done by hand, which protects the paint, leaves no water spots. You won't believe how good it looks. Walk-ins are always welcome, or book an appointment for a full detailing. Thursday is Ladies' Day. Get an additional service free with any regular wash. Kingley offers pickup and drop-off service. They'll take you to work, an appointment, and pick you up when your car is ready. If it's not Kingley, it's not clean. Kingley Hand Wash and Wax, 309 West Midlothian Boulevard.
Fit family, unique, individualized, and promoting a healthy, active lifestyle. Fit Family on Route 46 in Austin Town designs a personal exercise program just for you, with your own personal trainer. Each client at Fit Family in Austin Town receives their own certified personal trainer with their membership. And at Fit Family, we listen to you and design a fitness program to the type of fitness you're looking for, with all the equipment you need for strength training, cardio, Pilates, and more. We also offer classes in Zumba, yoga, kickboxing, step, 5K training, line dancing, silver sneaker, and real rider cycling. Fit Family is open Monday through Saturday with hours that fit your schedule. Find out more about Fit Family in Austintown. Call 330-793-4466. That's 330-793-4466. Visit us on the web at fitfamily1.com. That's FitFamily1.com.
I'm Julio Flores with your headline news. A Youngstown area couple have been killed after a single-engine plane crash at a small airport near downtown Kansas City. Officials have not confirmed, but sources say that Youngstown business owners John and Diana Lalo were the victims in the crash, which took place a quarter of a mile from Charles B. Wheeler Airport near Kansas City Business Center. The Lalo family has owned Royal Industries since 1965. The Mahoning County OVI Task Force, Mahoning Safe Communities, and the State Highway Patrol announced their campaign to take drunk drivers off the road Monday morning. Grant money has provided a larger law enforcement presence during a time when officials say drunk drivers are getting behind the wheel. Pymatuning police confirmed that a male in his 30s was killed Monday while working on a tank at Brownies Oil Company in the Reynolds Industrial Park. The tank, which held 10,000 gallons of off-road diesel fuel, caught fire and exploded. Pymatuning Police Chief Eric Bauer says the explosion appears to be a tragic accident, although the cause is still under investigation. For WSOM News, I'm Julio Flores.
The Cumulus Health Club and the Center for Physical Health in Canfield present today's health tip. Here's Director Mary Beth Romeo.
Exercise can help you prevent or manage a wide range of health problems, including stroke, type 2 diabetes, depression, certain types of cancer, and arthritis. The Center for Physical Health can help you by showing you the right way to exercise. Visit them at thecenterforphysicalhealth.org to learn about the programs we have available.
Today's health tip has been brought to you by the Center for Physical Health in Canfield. From physical therapy, the treatment of chronic pain from sports injuries, or taking your performance to the next level, the Center for Physical Health can help you eat right, think right, and move right. 4137 Boardman Canfield Road, Suite 104. Call 330-286-3850.
Are you looking to save money on your heating and cooling bills this year? Quality Windows can meet all your window needs while improving your curb appeal and increasing your home's value. Family owned and operated since 1998, Quality Windows lifetime warranted easy maintenance windows can save you up to 35% on your energy bills. They'll bring the showroom to you.
Hi, this is Kevin Goldberg, owner of Quality Windows. Call us today for your free in-home estimate at 1-800-863-9344. And you won't have to worry. There's no high-pressure, three-hour sales pitch with us. We don't require down payments, and we also have many different financing options available. And our prices start at just $179. And if you call in and mention this ad, receive an additional 20% off our Timeless series. And all the Quality Windows come with a true lifetime warranty.
Get your free estimate and more info at QualityWindowsLLC.com. 800-863-9344. Quality Windows. You've seen the rest. Now come see the best.
News Talk 600 is working to help put our valley back to work. We've come together with local employers and training centers to connect job seekers with potential new openings and new careers. Visit our website and click on Features. That's where you'll find links to local companies and training centers, and you can even submit your resume right online. Putting our valley and America back to work. Visit 600WSOM.com.
1-800-530-WSOM or 347-945-5229. Call in now to talk to Tracy and friends on Newstalk 600 WSOM.
There's a metal gun case. We live in an area that's wooded, somewhat secluded. And I said, Jill, if there's ever a problem, just walk out on the balcony and fire two blasts outside the house.
Buy shotgun,
you don't need machine gun, you don't need 30 rounds, buy shotgun.
Hey, we're back, and you're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600, 36 minutes after the hour of 12 noon, here on WSOM AM 600. And today's the 20th of August, and it's moving by really, really fast. And I got South Carolina on the phone with me. It is open mic today. And want to hear from you today. I was playing Guy. And Guy is, you know, from my era. South Carolina, you remember Guy, don't you?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But I don't know if Guy tops this one. I mean, this is just so cool.
What?
kill my bro. In your bed at night,
in your home, say it isn't so.
Americans could be killed by drones. In a cafe in San Francisco, no.
I mean, if you haven't seen that, if you haven't seen the video, if you don't have internet, if your kids don't have internet, if you don't know how to get on, if you do get on, go on there, buy a shotgun song by Flying Robots with Joe Biden. That's the best song. I mean, that should get a Grammy or something.
Well, I tell you what, depending on who's coming at you, you shoot a shotgun at them, all you're going to do is really make them mad.
Listen, Matt is having problems, and his browser is crashing every 5 seconds. He wants to know if there's some good taxpayer out there that wants to buy him a new one.
if it's Internet Explorer 9, yeah, I'm having some problems with mine crashing.
No, you guys are Mozilla.
Yeah, that's
Mozilla
will.
But then don't do Microsoft Exploder.
Exploder. that one has some issues, especially when I open up some certain websites. It just crashes. It just won't stay open long enough. And if you're doing some work there, you wind up losing all your work, and that really gets on your nerves. So. Yeah, they've got some issues. A computer guy told me to use Chrome as well.
I use Chrome sometimes. It all depends on your firewall. Chrome works well for me. I use Chrome when I can, especially if I'm hardwired. Some places I use Mozilla. I very, very seldom, unless I have to, use Internet Explorer. I just don't let that happen. I mean, it just doesn't do it for me.
And if I'm on my Mac, definitely Safari. Yeah.
Well, see, you got it like that. But wait a minute. No, Matt's just trying to get some. Matt is just trying to get some free stuff. He says he deserves it, he's earned it, and he wants some free stuff. Listen, don't nothing come free but newspaper and STDs. Y'all want y'all to understand that. And then neither one of them are free.
Well, Matt, if you don't have a conscience, you can get all the free stuff you want. You know, just go in there and get you some fake papers. You'll be all right.
I was going to ask you something, and I can't remember what. I'll have to think about it and come back to it.
I think that every American needs to spend at least a good month in a foreign country living as the foreigners do. If you go to Mexico and live as a Mexican for a month, I go to Honduras, live as a Honduran for a month, or go to Okinawa and live like they do for a month, and you will gain so much more appreciation for America.
What will you gain?
You'll understand that, hey, we really have it real good over here. You get over there and you have to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, go and get in your boat, fish until 2 o'clock in the afternoon, come back from out in the ocean, try and find somebody to sell your fish to, no air conditioning. When the sun goes down,
they can't buy.
Out.
Wait a minute, they can't buy a shotgun.
Nope, they couldn't buy a shotgun. the little kids down there use slingshots. When I was in,
they
Honduras,
use them quite well
kid.
Too.
Oh yeah, there was a little kid. When we would go and fill up our sandbags, you know, this little kid would come out there and hitch a ride on the running board. He'd go to the what we call the sand pit with a slingshot and kill iguanas and take them back in the mill, and they would roast those things, man.
And do what with them? Iguana? Oh, whoa, South Carolina. Hey, Matt, your mic's on. Iguanas are pets.
That's my foot. Iguanas are food.
Iguanas are pets. Dude, they change colors. Mm. They're pets.
I'll tell you what. An iguana is food.
Matt.
Yes, ma'am.
Iguanas are pets, right?
Iguanas bother me. They listen, I'm afraid of snakes, and if you cut the lights off an iguana, it kind of looks like a snake. I don't like anything that looks like, you know, Godzilla of old. I'd rather stay away from reptiles or amphibians, or I don't care what they are. Go ahead and eat them. Have
okay.
them in the I want nothing to do. I'll shoot them for you, you know? That's cool, but...
But,
no.
Okay, Matt, listen to this. I'm with you, but now I'm with you on the I wouldn't have it as a pet. But do you understand iguanas are not males?
Well, you know, I watched a show last night about what we would do if we had to evacuate Earth, and they said something that horrified me, and that's that steak is no longer an option. They said we'll be eating algae and we'll be eating bugs, and to me that ain't food either.
You know,
if you eat cereal, you might be eating some bugs as well, you know.
No,
okay,
you don't. That's why you look at the cereal. That's why they eat cereal in the light. No.
Can we, let's see. I get these stories quite a bit where they talk about what's in your food. I don't even want to think about it. I really don't. If it looks pleasing to the eye, I'll close my eyes and dig in, you know.
You know when you eat cheese and the cheese gets a little brown around the sides or gets a little green and they say just cut it off? No.
Yes.
You don't cut it off. No.
You eat it.
I don't
it.
Care if it is government cheese. No. No,
You're talking to a guy who came from an old Hungarian family where we used to leave sausage hang out for a week so it could dry and the whole thing. Yeah.
Dry it out.
So, but I didn't pay much attention to that. I paid more attention to what was on my plate afterwards without thinking about how it got there.
No, guys. That's why we live in America. South Carolina, you got that cheap Bluetooth on again?
My Bluetooth ain't cheap.
Yeah, it is.
It's not cheap. You can hear me now, right?
No. You sound like you're talking in a tunnel. You sound like you're talking with a string.
Oh, man. I don't know what to say. I'm just so far from the tower now.
No, don't be blaming it on the tower. That's not tower related. That's cheap Bluetooth.
Can I blame it on the rain?
You can't blame it on the rain. No, that's cheap Bluetooth. What's the manufacturer of your Bluetooth in South Carolina?
LG.
I found a good one for you.
What?
It is called Piton, P-H-I-A-T-O-N, Piton.
Okay.
Great Bluetooth. That was a free commercial for them. Somebody call them up, tell them they need to pay for that one.
Now... I am on this thing constantly.
Until you get with me.
In the past year, I have gone through 4 Bluetooth devices.
I believe that.
Including the jawbone.
Nope. That's what I'm saying.
My wife has gone through. My wife's still got the same Bluetooth device she had before.
You got to check this one out, South Carolina. It's called Piton.
Okay, I'll try it.
Python. It is a wonderful ear. It's a wonderful Bluetooth noise canceling. It works. It doesn't. Because Jawbone never worked for me, and I've tried them. I've tried to work with the people. And listen, Bill said that iguanas taste like chicken.
They sure do.
South Carolina, have you had an iguana?
Yeah.
Why?
Because it was food. Listen,
No. You were in the military.
Yeah.
Why?
But Tracy, they had some of the. I mean, these guys would go out with their nets and they would go out in the morning and they come back. They brought us a big tub full of lobster tail, okay, and shrimp.
These
were shrimp. Those were. Prawn. I mean, it was like huge They sold us both buckets for $5.
Okay.
We cooked them and ate them.
Lobster is one thing. Iguanas are another. Lobster
iguana,
crustacean. The iguana changed color.
It's nothing but food. It's nothing but
no.
food.
No. No, no, no. Iguana's a pet. It's like eating Bambi. No.
I don't think so.
No. South Carolina, you were in the military. You were never that hungry. We take care of our military when they're fighting. We keep them strong. We just don't take care of you when you come home.
Isn't that the truth? The sad truth.
Sad but true. You mean something when you're fighting for our country is a whole other thing when you're done. When you come back all beat up and bangled up and getting old on top of it, that's different.
Oh, goodness.
What'd you say?
Send him that Bluetooth soon.
I know, I'm trying. I'm trying to get, trying to hook him up, and he won't listen to me. You know I can't hear him. He's trying to go down the street and be safe, and I appreciate the safe. We just can't hear you. Hey, the number 347-945-5229. No, you're breaking up really bad. But I do love you. Matt, what's new in your world?
Oh, nothing much. Working and for some reason it was funny because after the show yesterday, I had had a conversation with somebody, a different liberal, who sent me down the path of the entitlements and I had a meltdown and I threw it on my Facebook this morning. I don't understand the mindset when we're talking about just allowing these entitlements, and there's no stop to them. There's no control to what they want. And it's like, what don't you understand by looking at history and realizing that every time government has injected itself, it's gotten worse with the healthcare system, with entitlements. It's draining the country of everything. People are wanting. People are needy. And they like being wanting and needy now. And I had a meltdown this morning, and I've been mad ever since. And I go, I had to throw up there and then take a break.
Matt, do you have children?
I have four.
Have you ever heard your children say, "When? That's enough. I don't want any more."
Oh, no. Oh, no, 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 no. No.
Why?
My children, even though they're good kids, if given the choice, I have young kids as well. I have a 21-year-old, a 24-year-old, and my twins are 10. So the twins are the ones I'm talking about right now. Obviously,
that's what we're talking about. We're talking about kids.
Right. They grow out of it. But if something goes wrong at school because they didn't do their homework or they didn't do well on a test, because you know that they were goofing off in class because you would talk to the teacher about it before, you'll hear excuse after excuse after excuse with absolutely no taking any personal responsibility and saying, "Yeah, I should have done better." That's exactly what I hear out of these liberals, grown liberals, 30, 40, 50 years old, that are wanting these entitlements. There's no personal responsibility. It's always an excuse. It's always give me. I'm not going to get on my feet, pull up the bootstraps, and do it myself.
So now let me ask you this. Why, if I control you and you control your daughter and I want absolute control of you, why would I change and educate you so that you no longer want entitlement?
Well, as a parent, you want your children to do well and do on their own and have a life that they could be proud of.
But I'm not your parent. I'm your system, and I need you. I need you to depend on me, because if you depend on me, you will always give me absolute power. You have absolute power over your children, and you're trying to grow them up to be independent of you and anyone else.
That is correct. I'm sorry, go ahead.
But what I'm saying is the system never wants you to grow up and be independent of itself, because if you're independent of itself, you take your power with you when you go. See, when
correct.
I become an independent woman, I'm no longer dependent on my parents, they no longer have control over my life, and they lose power over me.
And that's fine with me as a parent.
And so the same situation is going towards entitlement. The system, people on the system want people to stay uneducated and dependent upon the system so that they always have power over them. And as long as I have power over you, I control what you eat, I control where you sleep, I control where you live, I control what you do. I own you. Slavery, there's a reason why the people in the South did not want slavery to end. There's a reason why people did not want Jim Crow to end.
Now,
take away the color.
Go ahead, Tracy.
I was going to say, just take away the color barrier, and you'll have your question why people still want people to give them.
And it makes perfect sense if you're the one, and it's sad to say this in America, because there should be nobody in power other than the people. But that's changed. So it makes sense if you're the one in power, because you're getting exactly what you want. What I don't understand are people that are very capable of reading, studying history, and actually just having common sense thrown right in their face and going along with it as if with blinders on. I don't understand that.
Not when I have control of you, too. See, again, people think they're free. I was telling South Carolina that. People think they're free. They really do. People think they're free to go and come as they choose. People think that they're no longer slaves to the system. And because they have their education, they really think that they're independent of anyone, and they're not that free. They're still going to the same news sources for their own news. They're still depending on the government to come and bail them out, even if it's corporate. Why did General Motors and Ford go to the government to bail them out when they act, not Ford, General Motors and Chrysler, when they went bankrupt? What company goes to the federal government to bail them out?
A company that that was completely irresponsible with the way that they ran things. A company
why did they
that
go to the,
well,
why
hold
they
on,
go to the government.
That's what I'm. Well, because that's your bailout. That's how you can to get what you want.
Donald Trump went to the banks.
Well, the banks will turn you down.
But why did they go to the government? I mean, who goes to the government to bail you out of a private company to come out of bankruptcy? Who does that?
I don't know why
people
they went to the government.
People
sorry,
that are under control.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know why they went to the government, but I know why the government did it, and that's for the control.
Right. So you said, well, how can people not read for themselves? How do people with that much sense, with that much power, still go to the government for them to bail them out? Think about that. And then the government bailed them out with
now
other people's money.
Now, let me ask this question if you're a liberal, too. And you have to ask yourself, why in your liberal mind, these people, these CEOs that ran GM, these CEOs that ran these companies that got bailed out by the government, why do you support the bailouts? Because you just allowed these rich CEOs to get exactly what they wanted. Why do you support
them? Called Golden Parachute. Hey, Sticks.
Hey, how's it going today, Tracy?
Good, how you doing today?
Good, feeling much better. Hey, don't forget,
I'm
we
glad.
Got a precedent here. Yeah, we got a precedent here. You had Chrysler get bailed out once in the 70s already, so it's nothing new.
But look at the mindset. So now going back to my analogy about children, when we get in trouble, where do we go?
To our parents.
Same thing.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's why if you look back, that was the rationale for setting up the Federal Reserve. So they could bail out the banks if they ever had another panic. Because remember, J.P. Morgan loaned gold to the federal government in the last part of the 1800s, or the first, yeah, last part of the 1800s, first part of the 1900s, because they were broke.
Same thing. Now you will never have a private company loaning money back to the country. We just print more money and we go broke. because right now we're printing false. Alex is always talking about this. We're printing money that we don't have. We're just making paper.
We've been doing it since 1913.
It drives me insane that people don't I still talk to people that say, so what? They don't understand the devaluation of the dollar. They don't even understand that the dollar is backed, or should not really. It's backed by the good faith of the U.S. when it used to be backed by gold. But they think that once that dollar is printed, that dollar is a dollar because it says it's a dollar. And they don't understand it.
So why don't we teach economics in school? See, we're teaching our kids a whole lot of stuff, but we're not teaching them how to think critically, and we're not teaching them about economics. We're not teaching them anything like that. We're not even teaching them how to make a living for themselves. Anytime that you go to school and they don't teach you home economics, which means teaching you how to live on your own and stand on your own 2 feet in your own home, what does that say? We go to school to learn what? School's getting ready to start. We send our children to school, and what are they really teaching them? And how are people going to know about quantitative easing if it's not taught to them inside of their schools?
It's another way that you maintain control and power. That's why they don't teach economics the way they used to. As long as kids are graduating from high school, not knowing how to add, and not understanding that a dollar, what I just said, that a dollar needs to be backed by something. They have power and control, and the more that they print, the more of a hero they'll look like.
Alex says they do not teach currency, and that's Stix's big thing. They don't teach currency. They teach money. Money is not currency.
Absolutely not.
So now we have money, and as long as we think we have money, and we don't learn wealth building. They don't want you to have wealth, because wealth gives you wealth actually. And actually, there are a lot of people who are wealthy who have who think that they're being controlled, who are being controlled by other entities other than themselves. They don't want any more independent thinkers.
The quickest way to ask somebody, to find out if somebody understands the difference between money and currency, is to ask them, would you rather get a raise every year, or would you rather keep the same amount of income and have your dollars buy more each year? That's the question. And until you understand the answer to that question, you don't understand money and currency.
We don't even hear the words money and currency. Hey, the number is 347-945-5229. We don't even hear those words coming up. But look at the conversations that you have with your young people today and about what they're learning in school, and tell me if they have been learning about currency in America.
Oh, no.
And tell me,
no.
And as a matter of fact, if you really want to have a real stunner, go and ask a teacher about currency in America.
Well, they're just as ignorant on the topic as anybody else.
So how can you teach my child?
The teacher will tell you that they'll give you a good lesson on money and currency by telling you that they're not making enough money and not understanding what their job is in the public sector.
And so right now we have a looming teacher strike on our Youngstown City School District, and they want more money. Here we go again. They want more money because the dollar does not go as far as it used to, and they probably deserve more money. Don't get me wrong. But they don't comprehend the currency and what's driving this, and why we can't get where we're getting, and why they're not producing what they need to produce based upon a system that doesn't want them to know anything, including instructors.
Well, here's the bottom line on all of this. Commodities are all priced basically in gold. And commodities are the one thing that a business cannot control. The price of that.
Can you stick around for just a second? Can you stick around while I go to break? Let me go to break. You're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229. We'll see you on the other side of my break. Thank you.
WSOM, Salem, Youngstown, Warren. The home for afternoons with Tracy and friends. News Talk 600 WSOM.
Became one of the nation's most acclaimed crime writers.
Hey, Sticks, you there?
I'm here.
What happened? What do you mean you're feeling better? What happened to you?
I had an upset stomach yesterday, that's all. I was on my way in to do the show. Something had been reading me somewhere. Lost my lunch once on the way in, had to stop three times on the way home.
Oh, lovely. So, what, a 24-hour thing then?
Yeah, I'm sure it's just something I ate. So, but we're all good. How's the drum business?
It slowed down. We had a bit of a slowdown here. You ever heard of Zoo Lily?
What?
You ever heard of Zoo Lily?
No, I can't say that I have.
It's an internet-based company that deals with, like, they have deals of the day, and it runs on their website. They're pretty big. And we had a contract with them to run, and we were actually kind of counting on it, even though, because our other business, our international shipped orders slowed down. But so we were kind of counting on the Zoo Lily, which is a good idea, but they kind of screwed us. So we kind of put all of our pennies in one barrel, and it didn't quite work out. But that's supposed to right itself. Other than that, it's doing really well. We've been extremely busy this year, so I'm happy.
Good. Hey, did you hear about the? Do you know about the D-Day reenactment up in Conneaut?
I knew that they've had that before, right?
Yeah, they've been doing it for like 13 years.
Yeah. No, I've never seen it, but go ahead.
Well, we went up there last week, and you need to take your kids up next year. You really do. They had 1,000 reenactors there.
That's pretty wild.
They actually load guys on landing craft and land them on a beach.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I said, I've heard about it before, but yeah. And I used to go to Conneaut all the time.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, living history, it's great because these reenactors, I mean, they actually play the part. If you go up and talk to them, they know everything.
Yeah, that's true. I've always gotten into the reenactments. I was in Virginia one time and saw a Civil War reenactment and didn't realize how cool those things are, and they are pretty wild.
Yeah, I worked with a guy that used to do Civil War reenactments. He was a now those guys really get serious about it because he played a Confederate soldier from Texas. He could tell you this guy, he actually researched this particular person. He could tell you his wife's name, his children's name, his mother's name. I mean, he was like, when he went for the weekend, he was this guy.
Wow. Yeah, it's pretty cool. And I mean, the guys that I saw, it was, you're right. It was for the weekend. I was never walked up and, what's your real job? What do you really do? You know, you'll never get it because they'll look at you like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Right.
Yeah, it is pretty cool. Hey, that leads me to an interesting question, and it just popped into my head. And since I got you on the phone, I saw a Facebook post, and it showed a picture of all of our soldiers from the Revolutionary War on up. So, like, each soldier represented a time or a war during American history, and they were marching in a parade. The one thing that was missing was the Confederate soldier, and somebody had put down that since the Confederate soldier was missing, it's actually an incomplete group. And there was a big argument about it that went through. What do you think about that?
I don't know. I think to be historically accurate, there should have been Confederate soldiers in the line, probably. Complete or incomplete, I don't know. You know, that whole Civil War thing, to be honest, it bugs me because it was really more about money than anything else. And that's what really bothers me.
Right.
Because, especially after hanging out with Tracy, I'm learning so much about what was going on in the North in the same time. And, you know, We ain't really white.
Right, yeah. It is amazing, you know, what you learn from this show and talking to people on the history. And so I just found that a very interesting discussion. And I basically took it as this. And I said, as far as the way I read into it, when the Civil War happened, the Confederacy actually separated itself from the Constitutional Republic as it was founded. And that was the reason I said I don't think that a Confederate soldier should have been part of that, because it was a rebel faction.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think it's a cool conversation, that's all.
Well, let's go back and dissect history a little bit. Think about this scenario. What if the cadets at the Citadel had not fired on Fort Sumter? What if they had just sit there on the border and said, we're our own country, if you don't like it, come and invade us?
Yeah, that's a good one. I like that.
Because I think if they'd have done that, I think France would have jumped in same day.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, it would have been a different outcome, that's for sure.
Because nobody ever really thinks of that scenario.
Well, go ahead, Sticks.
Which actually would have been probably the smart thing to do on the southern side.
Well, yeah, I mean the obvious. I don't know. It's an interesting history to the fact where, you know, there were other countries at play. There was other soldiers at play, or you know, being supporting one side or the other, or supporting certain people. And it is funny how the politics internationally affected a lot of the wars, any war, even the Revolutionary War. If it wouldn't have been for Ben Franklin doing, you know, his begging to France,
yep.
He would spend, 2-3 years in Paris.
Right.
If it wouldn't have been for that, we probably would have lost the war.
Right. And we almost lost the peace. Because have you ever looked up the continental currency?
I know there was continental currency, but no, I've never researched it before.
The inflation after the Revolutionary War got so bad that sailors would come home from sea and they would take their pay and they would make suits out of it and parade through town because it was absolutely worthless.
I had no idea. Why was it so worthless?
Because they just printed money out of thin air with nothing to back it up to pay the war debt.
Right.
I read an article, and you can go to Von Mises. I think it's vonmises.com. It was so bad that people that had money owed to them, like shopkeepers, would actually jump out of the back windows of their house.
Hey, we're back. And this is Tracy and Friends here on WSLM AM 600. The number 347-945-5229. Got Sticks on the line and Matt on the line. Want to hear from you. Call us again. And again, it's open mic today, and so we'll talk about whatever you want to talk about today. And again, that number is 347-945-5229. So, Six, go ahead and make your comment. We were talking about accountability and entitlement, and you were making a point, and I needed to go to break. So, did you write down your thought, or did you forget it?
I didn't write it down. But the thing is, people don't understand that for 100 years in this country, we had what they called benign deflation. And wages didn't increase. But because of advancements in production and advancements in labor, the standard of living was rising. So every year, even though you weren't making more money, you could buy more stuff. And the standard of living between 1789 and 1913, worldwide, in the Western world, increased immensely because the entire world was on a gold standard.
Okay. So what's happening now?
What's happening now is they're printing money out of thin air, and for a while, the big companies were able to keep up, but they're not even able to keep up now. I mean, my dad worked for a small manufacturing company in Canton, And our family had relatively the same standard of living as my uncles that worked for Republic Steel.
Okay.
And into the late 70s and early 80s when everything came apart, my father's wages failed to keep up with inflation, while the guys that still were working at the steel companies, so their numbers started to dwindle, continued to get contracts that kept up with steel with inflation. And
so
now, unless you work at General Motors, you there's no way your wages keep up with inflation.
Well, actually, that's the problem with the unions and with what's going on now. People are trying to keep up, and they can't. And 440, your mic is on.
Yeah, you were talking about cheese before.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you a tip. I worked at a big cheese factory. They get 300-pound blocks of cheese, and they send them through the They send them through the slicer, which gives you the 8-ounce blocks. All right? That's cool to buy. But the stuff that hits the floor, they just trim it off, and they send it through the shredder, and it goes, they make those bags of shredded fancy cheese. There ain't nothing fancy about that stuff.
You mean the one that costs more?
Yeah. Yeah, that's sent through the shredder. That's the last stuff that I'll buy all the time.
So don't buy shredded cheese. Is that what you're talking about? So us lazy cooks that go and buy shredded cheese because we're trying to save time?
You shred that sucker yourself with that 8-ounce block. That's okay.
Hey, 404, that's the reason why my dad would never smoke cigarettes, because when he was a teenager during the Depression, he was the youngest union member in the cigar makers industry, and cigarettes were made out of what they swept off the floor at night after they made good cigars.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
No. They used to put it through a shaker, and it would shake the dust out of it.
No, don't be messing up with people. That's bad.
I swear to you. No, I swear to you. I'm serious.
Lord only knows where croutons come from, huh?
Who?
That I don't know about. That I don't know.
Little pieces of crust of bread nobody finished eating. They just chop off and make croutons.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
Anyway, Tracy, I heard you mention the cheese, and I said I got to call her and tell her don't buy that.
Don't eat the cheese. Don't eat the cheese. That's what you're telling
me. No, you can eat the cheese, the 8-ounce blocks, but not that shredded stuff because there ain't nothing fancy about that crap.
But it costs more.
So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, hazardous waste is expensive to get rid of.
Yeah.
Ain't not so blind, Mike. How you doing?
Good, Miss Tracy. How are you, sweetheart?
I'm good.
I'm doing well.
You chiming in on the conversation?
Yeah, I'm hoping to, because I'm trying to figure out exactly what. I just got here just a few seconds ago, and the gal was speaking about her dad trying to keep up with wages. And, union workers have done better than regular workers who are non-union as far as, because they were stronger going in wage-wise before the problems hit. So they haven't fallen quite as far as the average worker.
And Matt, the guy in the chat room who's talking about the Hellfire Club, I think Matt walked out. He'll be back. Alabama, your mic is on.
What's going on?
I forgot to call you back. How you doing, darling?
I'm doing pretty good. What's happening?
We're talking about entitlements. Are you one of those people?
I think we need to have a comprehensive way of approaching the entitlements. I think that you can help people, but the people that really need help are a fraction of the people that we think need help. Elderly, people that are elderly, okay. People that are sick, okay. But a lot of people that are on disability, you know, there's no way, we don't have any way of really knowing how to cut and save. So, I mean, and even with defense contractors, and there's a lot of waste, you know. So, I mean, when we say entitlements, you mean corporate or social?
Period.
Does social corporate,
I have a problem with corporate entitlement because it's almost like understood. Like, okay, Lockheed Martin needs it. It's for the country. It's for, and it's almost like the sacred calf. We can never touch it. So I think all of it should be open for discussion, not just, because I heard something about our defense. I heard that our defense is almost as strong as, like, or the size of all the other, you know, 12 top developed countries added up. I'm like, we're just that far ahead of everybody. So, I don't know.
But don't you think we need to stay out there?
I agree that we need to stay strong, but let's be honest, if we bring everything home and just work on development and working on having a strong defense locally to where if you ever mess with America, it's over. Like, you pretty much, you know, write your will out, then that's cool. But we don't do that. We think, okay, well, we need this because we're going to go fight wars over here and over here. And I used to toe that conservative Republican line, but I had to bag off of it after I really just started looking at doing some research into these companies and what they're really getting. These companies are getting, you know, ungodly, obscene amounts from the government to do things, and we're talking about welfare, which, let's be honest, welfare needs to be cut too. But let's not act like Lockheed Martin and United Defense. They used to come to Tuskegee recruiting because we have a great engineering department. And, man, these people, you know, they were bragging about the contracts. I didn't know. You know, it's like, they wanted me to work on some tank because I was in IT at the time. They was talking about some tank project they got and how many hundreds of billions of dollars, you know, billions of dollars they're getting thrown their way. So, I mean, we got to talk about that too, because these companies can't sustain themselves. Because they used to be a defense company, could, you know, they'll make other things to offset. But a lot of these companies now, they would not survive in today's market if it wasn't for leeching off governments.
Well, a lot of them,
which is just as bad. Which is just as bad as somebody sitting in the house watching TV, lazy, getting fat, and don't want to get a job. It's just the same thing.
A lot of these companies actually exist just for that reason.
Just to leech off the government.
Right. And I hate to say it, because there's a lot of bright talent, a lot of technology that's coming from companies like Lockheed, but that company exists for the government.
Yeah.
And my thing is, would be a lot more streamlined, less fat, if they had to make a profit apart from the government. A lot of this stuff wouldn't make sense. They'll say, you know, we're wasting money here. We need to cut the fat. We need to be a more streamlined company where we can be out here and be agile and do what we have to do. Well, they don't. When you got government contracts, and I'm speaking from experience, I have a friend that made a bid to process students in the MEPS, high school people, and he bid $1.7 million. And he said the lady told him he didn't get it, but somebody beat him by like $200,000 for like a year to go out and take the kids to the hotel and feed them. And we did the numbers one day, and it came out to about like $600,000 for everything. So he was just trying to get $1 million from the government to put in his pocket. That's normal. That's normal government process, and that's how it works.
And if I may, let me add this too. When it comes to defense, I agree with everything Alabama's just said. It's a huge problem, but what really doubles down on the problem is the fact that I agree that we need to stay a step ahead of other countries. Now, like what Alabama was just saying, we're like 30 steps ahead, and we're still going. What they're trying to do is use the way that we run these wars as an excuse to develop more and more and more. The way we run these wars is political correctness anymore. That's the way we run them. That's why they take so long. We should have been in and out of Afghanistan in a year and a half if we let our military do what it was supposed to do. But you can't do that and be able to make money by saying the reason that we're not as far ahead as we can get is because our technology isn't to where it needs to be.
Well, I think that I agree with that. I do think that it is the pomp and circumstance of being political, not going in, doing things a certain way, smart killing, so to speak. But at the same time, I wanted to get in the opium bit. I have heard people say it, and I thought it was just lazy. But the dots do connect when it comes to opium, when it comes to oil, when it comes to different countries' resources. The dots do connect, because what we don't see is the hand called the CIA that's moving out here and doing different things. The CIA, you know, when we go to war, a lot of times, some guy has went in there, some corporate hitman has went in there, tried to get the company to work. He failed, and then the CIA failed, and now we got to go in there to go to war.
Hold on.
That's
hold on, Alabama.
The way
Alex. Alex, you want to jump in?
I do. How are you doing?
I'm good. How you doing?
Great. I think that there's a difference between defense and military spending. Defense is home. You know, if we look at it from the constitutional sense, it's what we do to protect home. Most of the budget does not do that. And actually, I think depending on who you talk to, you know, which reports you get, we have over 1,000 military bases outside of the United States, okay? It's sprinkled around in all these different countries, all around the globe. That's the reason why the DOD budget is, was it $500 million or $550 million or whatever it is. That's the reason why, or I'm sorry, billion, $500 billion. That's the reason why it's so high. Most of those things have nothing to do with defense. I think that you could close down 75% of our bases around the world and then and invest in things like, you know, aircraft carriers.
Closing the borders.
Nuclear submarines so that to keep our international presence in the waters so that we can strike anywhere in the world. But and save money. Save literally hundreds of billions of dollars. That would be easy to do, but you know, there's no reason why we need all these bases, and we have like 30 bases in Europe. It's like, why do we have all these bases in Europe? I mean, the only thing we're doing is feeding their economy instead of ours. So, you know, if we close probably 75% of those bases, and I would say even 90% of them or more, but if you close 75% of those bases internationally, came home, secured our borders here and invested in certain technology like I said, like the submarines and even some sophisticated weapon technology, we would still be light years ahead of the rest of the world. But I don't think that's what our politicians just seem to be bought and sold by bankers and the defense contractors. It's about just keep milking the cow. You know, they're not really thinking about what's in the best interest of the country.
Well, Alex, I disagree with you a little bit on something. You're assuming that all those bases are strictly for strategic defense. They also have other purposes. A lot of those bases give us legal jumping-off points under the world law and in the world courts, so that if we need to do rapid response, since we have a base there, we have a right to land an airplane there as a halfway point going to somewhere else. You connect all of those bases, and you cannot eliminate 90%. And I agree there are a few that can be eliminated, maybe 10%. But also, too, those are how we train those. We bring them to our base to train those indigenous people in those areas to run their own military and everything else. It does support their local economy, and it's the way by which we help subsidize them. It isn't where we just hand them cold, hard cash. We give them a military presence that allows them to divert other parts of their economy to their own needs. And that's another way we help the government in power, especially if it's a friendly government. So it becomes wrapped up a little bit in the matters of state, and politics that way. But to say that we should just close them all, no, because a nuclear sub floating under the water a mile down or whatever isn't the same as having a place to take a burn victim soldier and get them quickly to medevac out and have a place where you can land the airplane in 2 hours instead of 8 hours.
Well, who decides which bases? Who decide? Where'd you get that 90% from? Who's the sense? I mean, why do we have to have bases? Some certain countries. Okay, one in Turkey, one here, one. If we just put one in each country, we still would be able to do what you just said. Do
I got the 90% from the same place Alex got? We should close 90%. I say keep 90% because I've talked to people who were congressmen and stuff on the defense committees. And when they, because they went in with the same attitude, I'm going to fix this whole thing. This is easy. It's just slash and cut, slash and cut. And then they began to realize that just wasn't so easy to do because of other political, economic entanglements and strategic entanglements, because some of those bases supply essential services in our global network of rapid response.
But why couldn't we do what you just said with one base instead of five? in the 20 bases in one particular country. And because 1,000 doesn't mean...
I have no idea why we can't, for the same reason you don't know why we could, because it's not our job and we don't know everything that comes into play.
But now,
I don't have the kind of checklist in front of me. The congressman only talked to me for 15 minutes on the subject.
Well, I think at the same time, though, it depends on what your – it goes back to your philosophy of government. I understand what – you know, I understand what those all those bases are used for. So if we go back to a constitutional government, then like Jefferson said, we have free trade and friendship with everyone, with every country, but alliances with no one. And so there's no reason for us to be policing the world and having these bases all over the world. So, you know, that's why I would say, yeah, 90% of them should be gone, because that was not an original charter for our government.
But maybe they are friendship, and we're keeping them there to keep the local people happy and friendly with us rather than forming an alliance.
Well, I mean, but you're keeping them down technically, because they need to be unhappy with their local government and the way things are, because that brings about change within these countries instead of just relying on the fat calf of America.
Alabama, when that starts working here, when people are unhappy, change happens, then I'll believe it could happen elsewhere.
No. But people are unhappy here, but there's always the government printing money to try to bail us out. If people are unhappy and we're not able to print, if it wasn't for the Federal Reserve printing money, there would be some change, because people would start saying, oh, wait a minute, this isn't right. But then people will educate themselves. But people don't have to educate themselves when all you can print money out of thin air. They can just, okay, well, we have enough. Here you go. And you can give them this illusion that it's going to be okay when it's really not. So America's a bad example. But, I mean, in other countries, you know, certain situations, like when we were here, the 13 colonies, and we were upset about, what, 1%, 5%, something like that in taxes, 3%. Mm-hmm. And, bam, we got a revolution over 3%. Now we're all paying 40%. And, you know, we think it's because we got roads and police and school teachers why they're getting the money out of our checks, which is completely not true.
All is true. And at the same time, it's not complete, because it's more complicated than even all of that. It is a huge onion that we have layered layers upon layers for 200 plus years. And to simply say the problem is the Federal Reserve keep printing military money, the Federal Reserve is also printing a lot of entitlement money, too.
I mean, they're putting money for everything. If you look at what happened, I guess, you know, they you can't take a White House tour right now because they can't afford to pay because of the last crisis that we had.
$900,000 a year to do the tours, private people, because they have an R after their name. Because the Republicans offered to donate the money and it wasn't accepted.
But hold on. But we've gone on 3 vacations since then. I mean, we got to understand everything. Everybody gets paid for everything. I mean, all this stuff is happening and everybody gets paid for it. And we are our priorities, and not just in the administration and not just in Congress, but our priorities are really screwed up. I mean, if you look at the raises that our congressional members have gotten in the last 5 years, remember they may take a stay on their pay, but a stay of $160,000 with no accountability, with a full budget, with a lot of your expenses paid, that's not a stay. That's a
I'm gonna say something about Congress and our government. Our government is bought very cheaply. Relatively speaking, if you got a corporation of like Exxon making $100 billion or $70 billion or something per year, because that's the richest business on earth is oil, and then you turn around and these guys take $10 million and you spread that out over a bunch of guys, one guy get $20,000, another guy get $50,000 under the table. These guys are sold, bought and sold very cheap. So our government, it doesn't take much to bribe them. It doesn't. I mean, yeah, if you make $100 billion, you need to give me a couple of, you know, at least $200-300 million to bribe me. I'm just saying. But these people are getting bribed for $70,000, $50,000. I mean, these guys get bought out cheaply. So
that's what I'm saying. And actually, they're not getting bought out. They're just selling you. Remember, these guys are – I don't think they're bribing people, taking money and putting it into their pocket. What they're doing is they're selling you for somebody get a job, or they're selling you for a campaign contribution so they can stay in their $160,000 year job. Let me take my break. I'll leave the mics off.
Yeah, I think what Alex was saying, I do think you can close those bases. I don't think those bases are set in stone. I think that there was a country, a world before America. There will be a country after, and there are going to be fights and wars that probably need to happen if we pull back, because we cannot, yeah. We cannot as Americans pay for everybody's well-being in the world and then expect us to be around forever. One day we're going to go down, and when we do, these people are going to get the same experience than had somebody came in and pulled back. It's the same thing's going to happen either or. So it's not like we can sustain it. So why not touch the defense budget, a quote-unquote defense budget? Why not touch it and start cutting that and start cutting even and cut some of these fiscal things that they're doing? I mean, like local social programs. Let's not, when I say cut, I'm not just saying let people starve and die, but let's make sure people are taken care of, but they're not living off the government if they don't need to. And there are a lot of people that really don't need to.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I think that what I think we America is really, we don't call it that, but it's an empire. I mean, if you look back in history, you know, the only country that have you know, they called them back then what, garrisons or what, whatever, but they had them sprinkled all around. These were empires. You know, the English did it, the Romans did it, the Syrians did it, you know, Genghis Khan did it, Mongolians or whatever. I mean, that's what they did. They put all these military bases or garrisons all around their empire, and that's what America is essentially doing, you know, what they have done, and it's proven itself to just be unsustainable. The only reason why it hasn't fallen apart is because the world is still accepting the U.S. the dollar, but as soon as the soon as people stop using the dollar for trade, particularly for oil, it's all going to fold. I mean, this whole game is just going to fold.
You really,
you know,
think that's possible, that they'll stop using the dollar for trading for oil?
They're already moving to.
A few people have proposed that every year for the last 100 years, but I mean, do you really think it'll happen?
Okay.
Yeah. Actually, I do, because there's already been a, I don't know if you want to call it a treaty or an agreement, that's already been signed by China, Russia, Japan, Brazil, South Africa, and there's about 10 or 11 countries. But
yeah,
these are major hard, I mean, big hitting economies that
yeah
have all agreed to stop using the U.S. dollar.
Right.
As soon as
China doesn't need us as their biggest trading partner to pay them in dollars, that'll happen. And as soon as Russia has a currency that's worth something internationally, the ruble is absolutely virtually worthless. And if it wasn't for selling their gas and oil on the international market and getting dollars back, they'd have no currency. So,
right.
So, you know, when you look at the whole geo-global picture, there's rhetoric and then there's reality. And that same thing goes for, you know, saying the imperial thing and making parallels to Genghis Khan.
So let me get this straight. So you feel as though we're going to just print money forever?
Hang on one second. Nothing's forever. Nothing's forever, Alabama. But, Alex, the difference between us and the other colonial empires, every single country we have a military present in, we serve at their behest. They could tell us to leave any time, and we would leave. And that's the rule there. Whereas Genghis Khan, once he was there, you weren't going to go and tell him, hey, we're sick of you, leave, please. Okay? So, you know, it just, you can't make those kinds of analogies.
I'm not sure, because Alexander the Great was like that. The Greeks were like that. I think Alexander the Great, he came in and did some libraries and made a bunch of places called Alexandria. He did some things,
yeah,
city-state, he would bring
leave,
in.
He didn't get up and leave. He did good while he was there. That was part of his strategy to win over the locals. Once he crushed the political system, he won over the locals by basically creating a welfare state and giving the people what they wanted. And
he did because of the democratic system in Greece. They did think that way. They weren't. They were somewhat like us, not all the way, but they were. So I think it has been done before. I think that's when Thomas Jefferson was designing the Constitution. Yeah. That's why he looked at the Holy Roman Empire. He looked at all these different past political systems, structure, and that's why we had a structure we have to try to offset it. That's why Alex was talking about the Constitutional Convention, because that's the only thing that'll probably save us right now. Because the way we're headed, we're headed for destruction.
Oh yeah. Well, the biggest problem with our Constitution right now is, and it started with the camel's nose in the tent. Everybody who sits in the White House, everybody. That means lots of presidents before this current president just decided anytime they didn't agree with something, they just ignored that part of the law and they wrote an executive order circumventing Congress or circumventing the judicial system. And now it's going even further because everybody is saying the same thing. You know, there's
He shouldn't have executive orders. The executive orders technically shouldn't be – what he really should be using is a line item veto to take – and that was taken under Nixon when he got impeached.
Yeah.
But that's really what is supposed to be used – to go and take little parts of a budget or a bill and change without having to go through the whole process again.
Yeah, but I'm talking about appointed nominees to the heads of all these different federal departments, like the heads of immigration and everything else. These are appointees, and they are picking and choosing which laws they're going to enforce. Congress passes laws, and they're signed by presidents. You can't – you swear an oath that you're going to uphold the law – and then you get into office and you pick and choose what part of the law you're going to enforce, and you blatantly say to the public, I'm not enforcing that law anymore. I don't believe in it. You don't have the power to circumvent 100 years of congressional legislation. And I take great issue. So I agree with Alex on that. Yeah, we need a constitutional Congress, and we don't need to run it through Congress. We need to just do the constitutional thing where, what is it, 34 states or 38 states, Alex, have to just say, hey, enough is enough, and that makes it law of the land?
Two-thirds.
Two-thirds. No, I think it's three. Like, I think
three-quarters?
Three-fourths. It's three-quarters.
Is
so
it?
It's like
38.
That's 38, yeah. Right. Yeah. For a constitutional convention, you need it. The standard is a little higher. It's three-quarters.
So which ones are holding out?
I haven't looked into that yet. I haven't done enough research on it to say.
Because you can pretty much tell those 12 that are holding out have been bribed. So we already know that.
Well, 34 states have already agreed to it. So I think there's four more they're trying to win over. At the very least.
Well, I know Alabama's in on it. I only have to look that up.
Yeah, again, you got to pick and choose your battle here. And the first thing I would think was that they should do, there's lots of things they could do, but I think the first thing they need to do is they need to go for a ballot budget amendment, and that until a budget is passed every year, no
term limits
can be done. That the budget is the first item that they do, because only Congress can set the budget, you know, and deal with those kind of matters, allocate, you know, the revenue. So I think they should go for that first. If they really do control this off, they get everybody there.
And also make it public, too. Make every dollar be accountable. In some way, we should be able to all look that up. We don't know. I think we should be able to.
Yeah. And if they get together and they start going down, well, pot should be legal and gay marriage should be okay. No, that's not a matter for the whole country to decide. That's a local issue. Every state should decide that. That's how I believe on that. But if you're
if it comes together, that's going to be thrown in there. It shouldn't be, but it will be.
I know, because some people are going to have to sell their soul to get someone else's cooperation. And it's going to be a big free-for-all like we see on the 7 o'clock news every night. When reality is, if they do pull that off, and we were talking about federal permanent change that affects the nation greatly into the future, it's got to be around the budget and a balanced budget amendment. Term limits, even term limits, shouldn't be on the table at that time.
I don't think you can fix the system if you go back the same way. You got to put term. I mean, you cannot. It's going to start right back up as soon as it's over.
Oh yeah.
In fact, the politicians are going to come out there and hold hands and sing together and act like they're all on board. Soon as it's over, they're going to do what they've been doing. Term limits would at least hold these guys, say, okay, I can't come in. It would kind of cut down. And at least if they bribe each other now, you can kind of see it a little better.
See, this is why they should let me write the legislation. Because, you see, I don't spell all that well, being blind. Because if you don't see the words, you forget how they're spelled. I might actually write that document as terminal limits. Oh, sorry, Congressman. Didn't mean to keep you up and worrying about your life.
Alex, what were you going to say? You tried to jump in there real quick.
I'm sorry, Alex.
Well, I was just going to say I don't really believe in term limits. I mean, you know, I don't think they will be effective, not really at all, because corporate. I mean, Congress is run pretty much like how big corporations are, where nobody's looking at what's the long term good. They're only looking at what they can get while they're there, and so. Just like how corporations, like heads of these corporations, they make bad decisions that affect either environment or even people or their retirement and things like that. And they don't really care because they get their bonuses and they're there for maybe a couple years or a few years maybe, and then they're out. And then, you know, another guy is on the board or a CEO or whatever. And the same thing just happens all over again. They play this political game. And it's the same thing in Congress. They get what they can get while they're there. And so you put term limits on it, it's just going to accelerate the same problems that are there. People are just going to get what they can get while they're in there. You know, so I don't think that really addresses the fundamental problem. You know, I just don't.
I mean, really outside of abolishing the IRS and getting rid of the Fed, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, those are the two things that got to come in there, but that's probably not going to be mentioned. I mean, if they do it. So, because I don't think enough people know about it.
Here's why I say don't abolish the Fed. And I can make a counter-argument why you don't want to abolish the Federal Reserve. Because what they're saying is, the flip side of it is, then the Treasury prints money. The Treasury is directly controlled by the Congress. What happens the next time you get an incredibly liberal Congress in again, who wants to have all kinds of entitlements, then they'll just order the Treasury to print more money, at least the Fed.
But they're doing it now either way. At least, okay, we have a time frame of, okay, this 1-2 year period, they came in and did it. But it's being printed it's been doing that from the 70s up now.
But then you would make the printing of money a political thing in this country instead of a banking thing. Given two choices, having a whole bunch of greedy, power-hungry people controlling the money, or a whole bunch of people with liberal political agendas who go home every day at 5 o'clock and don't really care because they're just federal employees, then I would rather have the greedy people because they'll watch.
But that's the way it's structured, though. I mean, I wouldn't. Well, the banks are doing the even worse stuff. I mean, the banks are doing even worse. So,
you know, the thing about that, though, is it doesn't really matter if the Treasury is printing money or not, printing notes or whatever. That's how it originally was. Again, if we go back to the Constitution, the only thing that was declared money was silver and gold. So even if the Treasury did print notes, they had to be backed by silver and gold. So they couldn't just print away if they were following, you know, the law of the land. So I have no problem with the U.S. Treasury printing notes as needed, as long as we have some kind of banking system that's sensible and that's backed by real money.
Well, let me fast forward 200 and some odd years for you. 2 years ago this October, the International Monetary Fund and the United States backed this. Now says currencies of the world will be backed by 20% silver and gold, because they said there's not enough silver and gold in the world to back all the currencies at the current volume of currency out there. And the other 80%, which I have no problem with, is value. It's commodities with certain conditions, like you can prove that you have X amount of that commodity, like oil in the ground or, you know, whatever the thing is. The alarm went off on my computer. And it can be backed by rice, corn, any commodity traded in the world that you could prove you have some of. You can back the currency with that as the value of your currency. And we signed off on that along with a whole bunch of other nations because it made sense, because, like I say, there's too many.
Mike, you just made a point about the International Monetary Fund. The reason they said that there isn't enough, because if Africa and all the states in Africa came together, and they would be the most powerful financial institution in the world.
Mm-hmm.
By far. I mean, exponentially farther than any other country. So they know that, so they're going to say that.
Well, they're going to say
that. We can't have that.
That would serve Africa because of their other than gold and silver wealth.
Yeah, but the IMF says that because, you know, it's the same ploy that they do against developing nations, because they want them to use their commodities so that they can come in and basically monetize it, you know, and put those countries in debt, you know, and most of the countries in Africa have, you know, unfortunately, after being saddled with debt, you know, recognize the game. Ghana is, I think, the first country that's going to come out of this debt in 2016, I think it is, but you know, they're going to say that because that's their game. That's how they stay, you know, they basically enslave countries.
I don't see that as an enslavement of their country because the commodities they're allowing are renewable, growable cash crops that the world recognizes have value, and it gives them a replenishable source of money every year. I don't see where it's enslaving them. I'm seeing where it's allowing them to play the cash flow game with the other countries who you know, can do the oil and gold and silver and oil thing. It's allowing other nations, like if you look at South Korea. South Korea has no other resources other than exporting a little bit of rice and some of the industry they have there, and their per capita incomes and everything else have them as one of the more solid nations in the world for their citizens and everything else. And their currency trades at 1130 of whatever their currency is called to the U.S. dollar. I mean, it's a penny currency, and yet they have an incredible standard of living, and it's 8 times higher than the average Iraqi. And when they've got all this oil and gold and stuff, and they're collecting nearly $100 billion a year just for the oil they're pumping out of the ground, and they have the same population, except they have an 8 times higher standard of living, and they're just selling rice to the world. So I just don't see the conspiracy theory meant to keep people down. I just don't buy into that. There's too many economies that make that not the case.
Well, in particular, it doesn't seem to be working so well for the 50 some odd countries in Africa, 53 or 54, whatever. And
they're rampant with corruption.
Yeah, but why is that?
Go ahead.
Hey, hold on, guys. Hey, the number is 347-945-5229. It is open, Mike, and we'll go where you want to go today. We're listening to Alex and them banter about the economy of the global world. And it's a great dialogue. And those of you who don't know, if you don't understand what's going on and what they're talking about, you know, call us and say, listen, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't understand it. Or break this down a little bit so that we can give you, either, if nothing else, words for you to research so that you can go and look into what they're talking about and you can expand on the knowledge base, because those who have knowledge will never be enslaved. And so I'm going to go back. Hold on just a second. Private caller, I think, Brown, that's you. Please be nice today, because if you're not nice, I'll hang up on you, because I get complaints.
Make me cry twice today.
Private caller?
I'm being nice.
Okay.
Boy, that's the nicest we've ever seen you been. You're not speaking.
No comment.
Well, sure.
No comment? Okay.
Brown is,
I mean, as of yet.
Okay.
It's coming. Just because someone disagrees with passion and tries to make a point, and it's hard to point.
Just be mindful. You can make a point, but remember, you have to be pleasant. I want you to counter what they say.
Positive.
I just want you to be nice. No, I just want you to be nice in how you say it.
Right.
Well, I guess I feel passionate like everybody else, and I hear a lot of things that I disagree with. And, you know,
I understand.
I'll be me, and the cards will fall where they may.
Okay.
I'm a big boy.
Has anybody discussed the Berthu issue there about Cruz?
The who?
The guy who's going to run for president.
It shouldn't be an issue at all. He was born in Canada.
Yeah. Yeah,
but he's an American citizen
born in Canada.
Whoa! Go back again. If he's not born in America, how are you going to be a president? Because you got to be
an American, and he's an American citizen by birth. But his mother went into labor while they were in Canada.
He's born in Canada. He's not qualified to be president. The end of story.
No, that's not true. Nothing about geographic location.
I read the Constitution on this morning. Read it again, please. You will see it says
right.
You must be an American.
Hold on, guys, one at a time.
Yeah.
So he is not eligible, or he is eligible. And my question is, if that's the case, why are we jumping up and down about President Obama being born in Kenya if his mother, and if he was an American citizen?
I never jumped up and down about it.
Me either.
I'm just saying overall.
Oh,
Understand overall. Course. Remember, there was a big controversy over a birth certificate and where he was born.
Yeah. Well,
if my memory serves me right.
Well, that was
probably because his mother is from the Midwest. That's the most logical reason why people were so up in arms about where Obama was born.
No, it was spiritual.
Because his mother
wanted to believe he was a deity, so they wanted to see he had no birth certificate. He was divine.
No, guys. No. You haven't gone too far. You haven't gone too far with that.
I thought he was born at the
saying.
End of the rainbow.
No, but you're going too far.
Back to Ted Cruz.
Go to Ted Cruz. Yeah. Go to Ted Cruz.
He
is an American citizen who was born on foreign soil, just like John McCain.
Yes. Yes.
And so what was the big issue about Barack Obama?
Because they weren't sure of his, because in the country he lived in, your citizenship is determined by your father, and if you were born outside, et cetera, and so it goes.
Hold on a second. Explain that again. Make it real clear.
Okay, I'll make it real clear. In the country where they alleged he was born, his citizenship would not be, it's granted by the father's status, so he wouldn't hold dual citizenship in that country. So if he were born in Kenya, then he would be a Kenyan. And
No. Not if you're an American citizen.
No, Kenya recognizes the lineage and citizenship of the father, not the mother. We recognize either.
Right.
It's pretty far-fetched that he was born in Kenya.
Well, I didn't say he was. I just doing.
No, it's in. More. It's more likely, if there's any truth to any of this, which I don't think there is, that he was born in Indonesia. He did live in Indonesia.
He wasn't born in Indonesia. Is where he went to school.
But that's just more plausible a story than him being born in Kenya. Of course, he was born in Hawaii, and he has a birth certificate that shows that he was born in Hawaii. But Ted Cruz, how is he eligible to become president? How does it work for him? You said someone said they read in the Constitution. I'm just curious how they
in the Constitution it says that if you were already living in the United States at the time of the foundation of the country, you were a citizen, and therefore you were eligible. Or anybody who was born, not here, it doesn't talk about geographics, it says born an American citizen. Supposing your mother was pregnant and she gave delivery to you while she was serving overseas in Germany.
Well, that's something different because everywhere you serve is American soil.
That's right. Well, not the hospital.
That's a little bit different. That's a little bit different than me going on vacation and having a baby. Because here, when they come across illegal in America and have a baby, the baby is American.
That's right. Because we recognize.
But you can be in Canada and become Canadian.
By being born there, yes. They have the same law that we have. If you're actually physically born there, you can be a Canadian. But his mother and was American, and so he's considered to be dual citizenship. He would have to renounce one of them to run for president, as I understand the legalities on this, listening to Better Minds Than Mine legally. This morning I was talking to some folks about this. And he would have to renounce his Canadian citizenship because he couldn't swear allegiance and take the oath and all that to the United States if he held a dual citizenship. So he would have to renounce his Canadian just to run.
America did not recognize dual citizenship of anyone.
There are people who have dual citizenship.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what we recognize or don't recognize, but I've known a number of people in my life who've had dual citizenship, and I don't recall anybody going out of their way to make
people have it, but they don't. They're not running for political office,
right?
You might like the way what Ted Cruz has to say.
Yeah.
I don't think. Well, then again, we never know what will happen after this presidency. I don't think that he has the popular support to get the nomination.
I don't think so either. I think they better come up with a heck of a dynamic candidate, somebody who's a cross between, you know, the eloquent speech patterns of Martin Luther King, can move people, and, you know, with the charm of Ronald Reagan and that twinkle in his eye and everything else. I mean, they're going to have to come up with a cheerleader.
You really
candidate.
Think so?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think to be who? Who's going to be on the other side? Because everybody,
Hillary.
The media has already crowned Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
Well, they did that in 2008, and that didn't work. And that didn't work out too well.
That didn't work out so well.
No.
Yeah.
No, but now they're making a movie about her. They're trying to make sense.
Yeah, we haven't talked about that yet either. You guys think that Priebus was right by saying if they release this movie, that Republicans will not take he will not participate with their advertising or with their debates when they actually come to run again?
What movie are you talking about?
There's a movie put out.
Hillary Clinton, her life.
Yeah.
And it's going to be running
NBC,
in a year.
It's made by NBC, and they're making this movie about her life, and it's just leading up to the 2016 election. It's just really biased, you know. The news on your network just it can't be biased if you're, you know, your ratings is going to be based on your viewership really having appeal to a Hillary Clinton, to the, you know, Democratic base. So why would you have your presidential and your primary debates on that network? It just doesn't make sense.
I can't see NBC making a hit piece, so to speak, on Hillary Clinton. It's probably a campaign tool they're getting behind
her.
NBC.
That's the point.
Right, NBC
that's the
is
point.
If Hillary comes out publicly and says, I am not running in 2016, then go with the movies that tell her life story. I mean, she's accomplished a lot. She's a very accomplished lady.
But why would you do a movie on Hillary Clinton and not on Bill?
Been there, done that. They can't elect him president, maybe.
Oh, he can run
again.
He's
ineligible.
There aren't that many. There aren't that many cheap actors in Hollywood to play all his love.
He can run again.
He served two terms. It's over.
No. You can't serve two consecutive terms.
No, he can run again. No, he can't.
Are you sick? No, he can run again.
It's two terms and out.
No,
South Carolina, we just got done talking about rules. And law.
I honestly believe if he could run again, he would.
Do you think he would?
Yeah, of course he would. I don't know. I don't think it's going to change anything, no matter who's president. That's the sad thing, that we get caught into politics and thinking that the answer is going to be with the new savior. They're not going to be able to change. They're still going to answer to the same powerful forces, money forces that control things. So, I mean,
I'm writing in Ron Paul in 2016, so whatever.
I like the way he talks. He appeals to me more than anybody else.
He needs smooth jazz behind him when Alex is speaking. Alex, even when I don't agree with him, he still calms me down. I don't get it.
Yeah, he's cool at it, isn't he? It's like, yeah. He's a voice of calmness.
He doesn't get too excited. He doesn't get like Alex Jones on the Piers Morgan show.
So,
he's real calm about it.
So I got to take a break, and I'm going to let you guys go ahead and do it. We'll see you on the other side.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Albinger. A school in suburban Atlanta, Georgia, is on lockdown on reports of a shooting.
It's happening at a charter school in Decatur, about 6 miles southeast of downtown Atlanta. Aerial pictures show dozens of students huddled with their teachers on the lawn across the parking lot behind the school. One person is reported to be in custody. The assignment editor of our Atlanta TV affiliate says someone in the school's office called the station and the editor heard shots being fired over the phone. No injuries have been reported.
ABC Stephen Portner watching the situation. The government putting military aid to Egypt on hold for now.
There are also some that have been stopped. The biggest ones have been stopped. This is the delay in the delivery of the F-16s and the cancellation of the joint military exercise known as Bright Star.
White House spokesman Josh Earnest on the military crackdown in Egypt. In an exclusive interview with ABC News, however, Egypt's interim prime minister says that'd be a mistake.
I'm not very pessimistic about the future of the relation. I can understand there is some misunderstanding.
More of the interview on ABC's World News with Diane Sawyer. The prosecution wraps up its case in the trial of Nidal Hassan.
Prosecutors spent the morning calling witnesses to discuss events leading up to the November 5, 2009 shooting spree that killed 13 and injured 32. Other witnesses described Hassan's wounding by a police officer at the end of the rampage. Now the prosecution is rested and court is in recess. Tomorrow, it's Nidal Hassan's turn. Acting as his own attorney, the 42-year-old military psychiatrist will have a chance to refute what nearly 90 prosecution witnesses have said. He may take the stand, he might make a statement, or he may decide to keep quiet and refuse to put on a defense at all. Jim Ryan, ABC News, Fort Hood, Texas.
More of us have car loans, and we're paying more for them. Credit rating agency TransUnion says the average balance, $13,000, up 4.5% from last year. Most of us, though, are keeping up with the payments. The Dow is up 48 points. This is ABC News.
Jay Farner here from Quicken Loans. I've got some important economic news. The economy is slowly improving, and we saw evidence of this on May 22nd in a speech from Ben Bernanke, the chairman of the Federal Reserve. When the economy improves, prices tend to rise. And when prices rise, mortgage interest rates usually follow. So if you've considered refinancing your home, you'd better act fast, even if you're underwater. If your current mortgage is higher than 4.75%, or if you owe more...
Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay.
Alex.
Those commercials are the worst. Good grief.
They got to stay on the air, you know.
Got to stay on the air. I did a little reading last night on the Federal Reserve, and I already know what it is, but... it really doesn't have the oversight. All Congress does is place governors or directors onto the board. They don't really have any, they have no control and no say-so on anything that the Fed does. The Fed is the central bank, and it's a group of bankers.
Yeah.
And that's dangerous. It's been that way for 100 years.
Yeah, and that's if you look at the last 100 years, when the Federal Reserve started, an ounce of gold was $20. Now an ounce of gold is $1,300.
It's $1,900. That's the business that I'm in.
So, you know, they've done just egregious damage to our economy and to our purchasing power, you know. So it's not
the
a
banks, good thing. The banks are which I tell people, and, you know, they control everything. They really do.
Yep.
And it's not. And the Fed is tied in to all the banks are interconnected globally. You saw that when evidence of that is when the collapse in 2008 happened. You saw these banks when they started getting the stimulus money, where it went.
You know, that's a key disagreement you and I have, Brown. I mean, you're right, except for I believe that the banks are granted their power by the U.S. government to go ahead and do so.
Right. Exactly.
You believe the opposite.
That's how it reads in paper. That's the letter of the law.
But here's the difference, though.
Why hasn't, since Alex just stated, since the devaluation of the dollar from, you know, I have a $20 gold pieces that I sell. Okay, they were made from 1907 to 1933. That was worth $20. And I asked people, you know, say it's 1933 and a bum came up to you and he asked you for a donation, you were in a good mood, you're going to either give him the $20 gold piece you had in your pocket or you're going to give him the $20 bill. What do you give him? I mean, you give him the bill. Since it's devalued so much, why hasn't Congress done anything to restrain or to control or to do anything about the Fed stewardship of the drop of the value of the dollar?
So that's easy. I mean, if you look at it, this is something else to research about And every look up Congressman McFadden, M-C-F-A-D-D-E-N, McFadden. He's one of other congressmen. Any congressman that usually stands up to the banks, to the Federal Reserves, they end up dead.
Right. Well,
so,
I didn't want to say that. You know, I didn't want to say that earlier. But what do you think would happen to a Ron Paul if he stuck his line and he were to and he were to get close to being the president? Okay, I'm looking here. Attempt to abolish the Federal Reserve. Okay, this is a long time ago. He stood up. He was born in 1876 and he died in 1936. Let's see here. He made the McFadden Act, 1927, lived on the Federal Bank of City. He ended up dead.
Let me ask a quick question, though. These people will. You're right. I mean, there is a lot of a violent influence involved, but. Let's just say that one of these congressmen, or let's say somebody was elected president, or let's say most of the Congress decided that these banks had too much power and they were protected, and it actually went through to where they were able to control the banks. Would the banks still have the power to do what they've been doing?
Yeah, they would. They would, because...
How?
The banks... Here's the thing, guys. I mean, you're talking about a partnership, and this thing came about after you know... World War II, or rather the Great Depression, but you're still talking about a private entity, you know, that is privately or, you know, publicly owned, but it's not owned by the government.
No, the Fed, you're talking about the Fed?
Huh?
The Fed is not publicly owned. It's privately owned. This is a consortium of private banks. What Congress does, and I can't hear you.
Oh, you're Bluetooth again, Sal.
Told
you had a cheap Bluetooth.
I'm in a Sticks.
No, you're not in the Sticks, because the Sticks is up here with Sticks. You out in the boonies.
That's further than the Sticks.
That's the boondocks. That's out there.
I think let me not get elitist on you guys.
That's right. Don't do it. If you want to talk about crazy, talk about the San Francisco people. They out of their mind. Period. Have you met Nancy Pelosi yet?
I'm from Los Angeles. I haven't met Nancy Pelosi. Have you met Jim Trafficante? Listen, I'm a fan of nobody, much less any politician. Let's just put it like that. I speak for myself. I represent the Brown Beasley Party.
Oh my!
Membership.
Hold
one.
On, South Carolina. Are you? Or can you talk yet?
Yeah, I can talk.
Okay, go ahead.
But what I was saying is the Fed is a privately owned entity, and they really can't really shut them down. You know.
I think.
How did we let that happen? It's like the IRS. It's like the IRS. The IRS can run amok, and everybody's scared of them, and they're just there, and there's nothing you can do about it.
The Fed came into the power the same year that the IRS was created, 1913. December 23rd, when Congress wasn't even in session, whomever the president was then, and it may have been Coolidge, I'm not 100% sure.
13, that was Woodrow Wilson.
Woodrow Wilson, who also pushed for the League of Nations. This guy was a globalist, a New World Orderist way back
birth
then.
Birth of a Nation.
This is Birth of a Nation, a little bit different. But the League of Nations, he was pushing things towards a New World Order, and he got a lot done. He created the IRS and he created the Fed. The legislation was pushed through when Congress wasn't in session, the same way that Obama pushed the NDAA in. It's a play that comes out of the dealing from the bottom of the deck playbook, and they probably attached it onto something, and they probably attached the provision onto something that was much bigger, and then people didn't notice, and the next thing you know, I mean, how aware were people then? and you couldn't spread the word about anything, and it's been like that since. So it happened December 23rd, a day before Christmas. Congress wasn't even in session.
And we never changed
that. Done by executive order.
And never reversed.
Never reversed. The banks have that much power. You got to realize the banks finance and are part of the, if not controlling, the pharmaceutical industries, the oil industries. Everybody needs the banks to do business. So all the powerful industries that we speak of, they're all connected to the banks. They're all financed by the banks.
Yeah, the banks can choose. The banks can choose if they want to. I mean, they could literally cripple the American economy at any moment, because I know that any foreign exchange that you do, any trading, if you buy any resources overseas, because I know, like, I've had things built for me, getting materials from China or Taiwan. They're not accepting American Express or Visa, you know, unless they have an onshore office like in California or something.
No, you're subject to the exchange rates.
Hold on, let me finish, Beasley.
You have to wire them the money. You know, you have to know that you got to get that bank SWIFT codes over in wherever country they're in, Shanghai or whatever, and you're at the mercy of the bank and their exchange rates and everything. And if the banks wanted to, they could cripple, foreign trade for any nation, which is dangerous. You know, because if a country isn't playing nice, playing the way that America wants them to play, like Cuba or somebody, they'll say, okay, that's great. Well, you can have all the money you want, but it's useless because you won't be able to exchange it to anywhere else to buy anything. You know. So
can I add something there? Then I'm going to stop
talking
so much. Okay. He mentioned that, you know, if the banks are not, even if they're here in America and founded in America, the banks don't care about American interests. If it benefits the banks do it. The banks are global.
Okay.
So they're not, just like any company here, a multinational corporation that has, you know, that sends jobs overseas, for obvious reasons, they're not concerned with the welfare and what's going on here in America. They're concerned about a profit. This is the driving forces of the world, and politics, it doesn't seem to matter which party or who's in office. Politics is beholden to this. This is what I was saying just the other day.
So do we not understand that America needs to wake up and understand what we're talking about? Hold on just a second. Local call, your mic is on.
We're actually agreeing.
Hold on, Brown. Go ahead, Mr. Dover. How you doing?
Pretty good. And you, Tracy?
I'm doing well.
Okay. The Federal Reserve Board was put here in 1913 by the English banksters to keep this nation in debt and to keep all of us in debt. And they've done their job quite well to the point of bankrupting us, because we are bankrupt. Our unsecured obligations, they claim $70 trillion now. I'm sure that's higher than that. But the 16 that they're claiming, the $16 trillion, there was $16,666,334,000,000. If you've noticed, they spend $100 million an hour. But the national debt has not risen because they don't want it to hit that $17 trillion threshold. So it's been staying constant for the last 90 days. So that's interesting and tough, because we're being lied to about everything. And we cannot pay this national debt off, period. It's too much money for every man, woman, and child. It's $330,000 for every man, woman, and child. On top of that, you are familiar with the Bank of North Dakota, are you not?
Yes, sir, I am.
Okay. The Bank of North Dakota is structured the same way our federal government was before the Federal Reserve Board stepped in. All their profits from their state banks feed the state government of North Dakota. And we must move to it here in Ohio, and we must move to it in Michigan real quick, because we can solve our own financial problems if they move in these states to do exactly the same thing. And because the banks are chartered in each state, all that they'd have to do is get rid of these bad, corrupt banks that took TARP money, and technically they took TARP money from the Federal Reserve Board, now loaning it back to the Federal Reserve Board at interest. And that's a good gig if you can get it, you know. So they're making money by loaning the money back to the Fed to loan to our government. And it's all a charade, complete charade, and we must dissolve the Federal Reserve Board and the states. I hope Michigan moves to it. Now, the Michigan has the rights to recall all of their politicians. And they should start recalling their politicians and do put in the State Bank of Michigan. And like I said, these crooked banks, the ones that's too big to fail, you've got Goldman Sachs, you've got Wells Fargo that was caught for dealing in drugs, you've got Citigroup, you've got all of these. You've got more than that. I'd have to look up the list. But we need to dissolve these banks and these states because they're corrupt and because they are, they should be declared illegal.
You know, now, this is my issue, and I want you guys to chime in on this. Majority of things that we're talking about here today, the average American citizen that's even listening in, they've not heard this conversation openly too often. We understand that, right?
I don't have a clue.
I discuss this all the time, but I guess I'm not the average American citizen.
I said the average American. Your average American voter, your average American citizen who is a citizen is not a participant in the dialogue of this leverage.
Well, no, there's too many other minor issues and discussing politics and the stuff that's on the cable news that distract us.
No, it's
getting to the guys that are talking today are getting the right to the meat on the bone.
It's worse than that, Brown. Unfortunately, it's the average American citizen anymore is worried about what the Housewives of Miami were doing last night.
Yeah, or American Idol. And, you know, I'm guilty, too. I talk about that stuff, too, because I don't have people
we can talk about American Idol, and we can talk about The Voice, and
no,
we can talk about other things.
It's really not important.
But
I just do it.
But what I'm saying is, but it's okay to talk about that as long as you have a conversation about this also. But the average American citizen, they're not getting this kind of information. And this is what infuriates me as a talk show host and as a person who wants people to think. I just want people to think, not to agree, but I want them to begin to attain knowledge, to glean knowledge, and then to think about what they've heard so that they can go out and make good decisions. Our young people today, they're not learning any of this, nor are the average American citizens learning any of this. And like I said a little bit earlier, if you would go to your average school teacher and ask them to start having this conversation, and these are the people – and remember, we've touched on math today. We've talked on the economy. We've touched on history today. We've touched on all these separate subjects. We've touched on science – all these separate subjects that should be integrated into our curriculum so our young people can have a great cerebral thought. None of this is being brought to them so they can actually start chewing on it and learning about it. Hey, go ahead, Mr. Dover.
Just like with powers that be, this country could not have been put in this shape without the co-conspirators, which are the Senate, the Congress, the Vice President, the President, the Supreme Court justices, because they have really loused up. They're ruling on things that they should not be ruling on. And they are not, and they're taking our Constitution while they're doing it. So people got to wake up on every angle of this, and these people should be actually jailed for what they have done to this country, because they have bankrupted all of us. They, you know, I don't care how much money you think you got in the bank, you ain't got it. That's all there is to it.
I got a question for somebody, because I need for somebody to tell me, what is hellfire? Benjamin Franklin, somebody in the chat room is telling me that Benjamin Franklin was a part of the Hellfire Club. I need to know what hellfire was.
I don't know, but I could find out in a moment. I don't know what hellfire is.
Dina, your mic is on. Does anybody else know, Matt?
No, I don't. Go ahead, Diva. Sorry.
It says the Hellfire Club was a name for several exclusive clubs for high society rakes established in Britain and Ireland in the 18th century, and was more formally or cautiously known as the Order of the Friars of St. Francis of Wycombe.
It's a secret society.
These clubs were rumored to be the meeting places of persons of quality who wished to take part in immoral acts, and the members were often very involved in politics.
Secret society where they did all kind of weird things.
So they all had dirt
on each other, right?
So another Bohemian Grove people.
Another Skull and Bones. Another, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. Some Masonic order.
And why is that the Masonic order? We believe everything on the Masons. Dang, do they ever get out?
Well, the structure is not the same as your local club there in your Kiwanis or your, which are still basically Masonic orders. It's not the same. And there's also, if anyone understands the structure of secret societies, is that there's the group within the group within the group within the group, and the fringes of the group, the membership of the group, doesn't necessarily know what the inside elect, the ruling elect, what decisions they make or what agendas they're pushing. I'll say this, and then maybe you guys can run with this. There's three major secret societies which have the illusion of being, I mean, they have websites. You have the Council of Foreign Relations, you have the Trilateral Commission, and you have the Bilderbergers. What do you gentlemen know about that?
We've talked about it. Don't forget. And where's Alabama?
Oh.
Is he on there still? No, Alabama's gone, because that's his, right up his alley.
Okay.
My question: do they intertwine, guys?
I'm listening.
Oh, there you are. Do they intertwine? Or are they all separate?
They intertwine. You can have, they have memberships. All. Jimmy Carter's a CFR, and he's also Trilateral Commission.
Do the organizations intertwine, not necessarily membership might intertwine, but do the organizations intertwine?
I'm pretty sure they do.
In some form, on some levels, they absolutely do, because they're ultimately after the same goal. What'll be interesting to watch is if it reaches those levels, if these globalist factions get what they get, it's going to be interesting to see the power struggle between them if it ever gets there, God forbid.
Well,
who's going to be in control then, right?
I thought about it. Well, I think a lot. I think too much. These three groups are primarily how do I put it? This is the New World Order that they're pushing is designed for the ruling elite, and it's the white ruling elite.
Hold on. If you look at their list, you'll see names on there such as Colin Powell and Barack Obama and some other black folks on there. So what do you mean?
The complex thing or the manifestations of white supremacy really doesn't have can manifest itself in anyone, and it doesn't really matter their skin color. Colin Powell.
What do you mean? Wait a minute.
I'll say it again. The manifestations or the ideals put forth and the principles put forth by white supremacy can exist in anyone. we're talking about, you know, the centuries centuries and centuries of a push of a white domination. It can manifest itself in someone of any skin color.
Hey, Matt, did you hear that?
Also,
go ahead, Alabama.
Also, what I was just about to say about the Bilderberg, I had a school teacher, and I went to public school, but I had a school teacher, guy by the name of Coach Hooper, that made me do a report on all three. And because I failed his class, because I was just chasing girls in basketball, and he had me do a report, and it taught me a lot about it. Back then, you couldn't find anything out about it. It was real hard back. It was like 92 when I did it. But anyway, as far as white supremacy, part of, the motive, the original motive behind it was to protect bloodline. They didn't want any race mixing. So hence the term white supremacy. Racism used to mean white, my race is superior. So it's about the superiority of one race and believing that your race is truly superior to another. So the race mixing was the general crux behind the motives of why they did a lot of what they did. Yeah, it was the motive.
Hold on, Brown.
Okay.
Because I wanted to get a start out and then jump in. Hold on. Go ahead, Alabama.
No, I was just that was primarily in prejudice, and it kind of morphed from being into prejudice to, you know, to prejudice and bias and and it all kind of morphed, and now anything done against someone that you feel it was based off of color can be judged as racism, but that's not the normal old fashioned meaning of it.
Go ahead, Brown.
As I stated, you know, the ideals of white supremacy can be found in, doesn't matter anyone's skin color, for them to subscribe to the tenets of it.
Hey, a lot of black women subscribe to it when it comes to dating black men. Yeah, I agree with you right there, especially black feminists. That's another show.
Right.
That's another show right there.
But we're talking about power. We're talking about power.
But I do have a question for you, because see what you're talking about, and let me say this, because what happens is a lot of people come in on here and they throw up the word white supremacy and they think that they're talking about prejudice or race, and we've gotten so far past race that we keep on throwing these terms up like white supremacy and racism, and we keep on throwing these cards out, not really understanding that supremacy is a structure that has absolutely nothing to do with color now, but it has everything to do with elitism.
Right. That's something.
Hold
on, Brown. Go ahead, Matt.
With ruling. Right. That's right.
That was something that I didn't grasp until I started listening to you guys. So it's nice being able to follow the conversation with a little bit more understanding when it comes to speaking about white supremacy. It puts me on a different level of being able to understand it. So it's not about, you know, one race calling another race, you know, out on racism. It's literally about pointing out that that's what it is.
But now let me say this. The problem, I want to throw this in there. The problem is most black people don't understand white supremacy is not about color either.
Well, the
you
reason why.
I mean, you
hold
understand
on,
where
no,
I'm coming
no,
from?
No, I'm confused. Because so if white supremacy is not about skin color or ethnicity,
right?
Do they those who subscribe to that, white supremacists, do they?
We're not talking about the people that are part of the Aryan Nation.
But not everybody who considers themselves a white supremacist subscribes to the Ku Klux Klan or the Aryan Nation. They just feel like I think it was Alabama who said that they don't believe in the mixing of the races.
That was the origin. Go back to what he said. Listen to what he said. He said it was
right,
the
now,
origin
now with the,
of
with the origin. Part of the reason why it was promoted, okay, and I'll make this real quick. Part of the reason why this ideal was promoted was a justification for the immorality of slavery, okay, which was a huge practice. Okay, so the way to justify this is that these are subhumans. You are superior. You were superior. Your advantage. And, you know, they've had biblical justifications to enslave, you know, people that look different from them and do it for centuries. So that's the justification.
Okay.
That's why I promote it.
And that's what I get. What I don't get is when Tracy said it was not about skin color.
No, we're talking about now, today, 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 today.
Now it's about class, right? You're doing right. You got it.
No, it's not about skin color today. It's about money. It's about power. It's not about color. And because there are a lot of people of color that are a part of these groups.
I'm trying to understand how that white supremacy.
I disagree.
Why would they use the word white supremacy instead of just using?
They don't use white supremacy. That's not what they call themselves. That's not what they call themselves. We're talking about the mindset, elitism.
Okay.
But the system is based upon white supremacy. It's
okay.
All the same.
I get you now. I'll follow you now. Okay, I get you.
It's all the same. And what it does is intertwine so they can mobilize people who are poor and underserved by an elitism mindset. Go ahead, Alex, because you said you disagree.
I don't agree at all that it's not about color anymore. It's very much about color. Now people of darker or elements, whatever, will be used, but the purpose is for the empowerment and glorification of the power structure or of white or European, it's Eurocentrism. So I don't agree with that at all. I mean, I think a lot of times black people are more racist than white people, but that's only because they've been enslaved, and so they've been mentally inculcated to function in that way, and so and to become self-defeating. But in the end, when it's all said and done, they can have all the money in the world, and but when it comes down to it, they won't have any power. And so because of their skin color.
You know,
you can be denied access.
Hold on. One at a time. Wait a minute. I think that was you, Matt. I think you jumped in first. Was that South Carolina?
Yeah, South Carolina.
Okay, go ahead.
I mean, in the grand scheme of things, if someone wants to be a white supremacist, more power to them. I have too many other things to be concerned with than somebody being concerned with the color of their skin. I am so tired of it. It's so aggravating. There's so many other things we need to be concerned with rather than the color of a person's skin, period. I mean, it's nauseating to me. It really is.
Now, South Carolina, this is not about racism. See, this is something different. This is when we talk about progressive.
When we talk about
progressive, and when we talk about elitists, and when we talk, because remember, what the conversation started about people who are part of the build up, the CFRs, the Trilateral Commission, and the Bohemian Grove, and all them people, and these secret societies. And I said, well, there are a lot of African Americans who are part of this group. And Brown came in and said, yeah, but it was founded on racism. And it was founded on prejudices and elitism and white supremacy.
It was founded on the ideals of white supremacy. And that what we were talking about to segue was who, as these people increase their stranglehold on the world, who is actually going to be in charge, okay? And you've got, and my thought is that those three secret societies will be uniting and working towards the same ideas, and what they'll be finding a way to do, when they're probably done already, is found a way to disenfranchise the Chinese. And that's real easy. If you think about it, the Chinese hold, $10, $11, $12, $15 in U.S. Treasury notes. If you whack the value of a dollar, if you knock the value of the dollar down to dust, what happens to all the treasury notes that the Chinese hold? They don't have power anymore. They've lost their stake, and the Middle East. I mean that whoever is there is in power. I mean the Saudis are a monarchy, which is the super elite there. They have control of the Middle East and the oil as well.
It's a little, and there's a big difference between these elites that we're talking about and, you know, no offense to anyone, not that anyone here is a Yahoo, but, you know, some person that's prejudiced.
There's a difference.
Yeah, and as far as racism, black people can be bigoted, black people can be prejudiced, but black people just don't have the power, the institutional the power to demean and keep an entire class of people down. And you know something? And if the majority of the people
South Carolina, you got to listen to what he's saying. You got to understand the difference.
He's
gone a little bit deeper than that. If you really look at the structure, we can be very, very prejudiced. We can be very, very bigoted. Bigoted means hate, and prejudice means to prejudge. But racism is about power, and we don't have enough power to have enough racism to do anything because we ain't got no power.
You got to understand
the definition that he's using. He's using a terminology. But if you separate them out, African Americans really don't have any power. So how are you going to be racist over nothing? What they are is bigots.
Tracy,
I know black people that are racist. When you say racist, give me the definition of your word of racism.
If someone who considers themselves better than somebody else based on the color of their skin.
That's not racist.
That is racism.
That's not racism.
I'm going to give you the definition from the dictionary. All right? Racism, the belief that race accounts for the differences in human character or ability and that a particular race is superior to others.
Exactly what I just said.
Racism. In the true natural sense of it. Just like the word gay used to mean happy, racism is about power.
Tracy?
It's not. Yes?
Yeah, there's no way. That's like saying that the way that a black person says the N-word and a white person says the N-word is different.
It is different.
No, that's not what I said.
It is absolutely different.
It's the same thing. It is a matter of free speech. If you want to be honest
it's a matter of meaning. Let me straighten that out for you real quick, and then we can move on. But one is used as a term of endearment, and all groups do it.
Bull. You cannot disagree because
you don't understand how it's used among the black people.
No, it's used as a term of endearment, but it's a double standard. It's a double standard.
It might be a double standard, but what I'm saying to you is...
It's not a double standard. It's the same word that means... It's the same word that takes a different meaning.
Hold on. Jeff, go ahead.
Yeah. White supremacy is and always will be about white supremacy because it was born of a bloodline of people, and they believe in what they believe in, but they are not necessarily all your elitists. Although they are very close, because the white people of Europe thought that they were better than all the other people. That's where you got Hitler's blonde-haired, blue-eyed people that they thought was the cream of the crop of human beings. That's why when Jesse Owens won the Olympics, they had a hissy fit about it. So you have to understand, they're the super race. And those people still are in existence, quite in control of a lot of monetary systems, and quite still prejudiced against you because you are lesser. In other words, even you can see what the low level wannabe racist elitists will do. They'll call you the mud people. Well, so will the real white supremacists. You have to understand, we're not talking about skinheads. We're talking about heads of state in Europe, whole countries in Europe. So, you know, you can't disassociate them in the United States now because they're all tied together. They're not Barack Obama and Colin Powell and Oprah Winfrey are doing the bidding of white supremacists. Whether we want to admit it or not.
So's Lee Daniels.
Are, absolutely.
Don't forget Lee Daniels.
Yeah, a lot of people are. They're right there doing this. But the thing is because we don't look at history and see who the white supremacists are, that's how you make a statement like you made, saying it's not about that today. Oh, yeah, oh, hell yeah, it is. Excuse my mouth. It's absolutely about that today. However,
I'm telling you.
However, you're seeing now where it affects you monetarily, and so you think that's the image. Oh, that's not the final that they're thinking. Okay, they're thinking something totally different, and you know it's heavier than just this. But I heard a lot of interesting things, and it's a good conversation. But don't deny the white supremacists. They are right there. They still believe
but Jeff,
in not mixing.
Jeff.
Yeah.
Let me ask. Let's break this down. Before I got to take a break, but I know we differ.
Uh-huh.
I understand the ruling class of the people that live in other countries, but white supremacy, at its core, inside the United States right now, if you leave it right here and don't go too far out of it, white supremacy, they are. Not necessarily about a pure, purist bloodline, because if they were, you would take a lot of people who are of Greek, Italian, and you would take them out of that equation. And they don't care if those other people are broke, Greek, downtrodden, don't have it. They don't care. It doesn't matter to them, if I'm not mistaken. Because you're talking about Aryan. If you're talking about pure white, where are you going with this?
And they don't care about the Italians or the Greeks, et cetera, et cetera. Because they are close to the mud people as far as what they believe. You have
That's
to know
what
who
I'm saying.
They are. And then
so when you get to Hungarians and Slovaks.
Notice that the Greeks nor the Italians have an upper hand in anything unless the United States, they're doing it with the United States. So understand, these people are not accepted by the true Aryan. And I'm not talking about the wannabe skinheads and things here in this country, and the KKK.
You're talking about the elite, the royalty of Europe, the royal families, the royal bloodlines.
You can trace all of our presidents can trace back within a certain generation to a certain house, and
even Obama's related to them.
Yeah, all these people they trace back, and the higher you go up in the Bilderbergs, the smaller those lineages get.
Well, you got to realize these royal families had all
the
money back.
The Merovingian dynasty is what you got to pay attention to.
Right,
the intermarried.
They intermarried. Why was it a big deal when King George decided to give up the throne to marry a commoner? Because he wanted to marry a commoner, they were up in arms. He was going to, and this was a white commoner. They want to keep the money tight. They want to keep the power tight. So he had to give up the throne of England to marry a commoner.
Those lineages. The lineages. When you look at bloodlines, you could just about break your way through just about all this red tape, all these different organizations. Why governments move the way they move. Someone said earlier, the West is set up to benefit white Anglo-Saxons. It is. That is just a fact. And Africa and all of these other countries that are being ravaged by these people, by International Monetary Fund, even Gaddafi going down, has a lot to do with that. And the CIA's dealings and how they operate. So we as America, we're the muscle of that figurehead. We are. There's some things in between, some pieces that we can probably finagle and get right to try to weaken it, but that is what it is. And in order for it to weaken, it's going to probably take some bloodshed. Because if we do this constitutional thing that Alex is referring to, I think they're just going to sit there. If they kill people, they're definitely going to do some things that are going to really, try to get rid of this. I mean, that's just the way I feel about it.
Even if this constitutional convention, they get together, what are they really going to be able to change?
Well, the purpose is to draft a new constitution, but the difference is it comes from the people as opposed to, like in all the amendments to the constitution have gone. If you look, read article, it was it article 5, section 2 of the Constitution, I think it is, or it might be reverse, section 5, article 2, whichever one. But on how to amend the Constitution, there's only two ways you can do it. One is 3/4 of Congress, of both houses, or you know, the Constitutional Convention, which is 3/4 of the states. The people of those states come to put forth their amendments because their Congress, their federal government, has failed them. And I think we're at the point where our federal government has failed us. So that's the fundamental difference, because our Congress is bought and sold and paid for by the banks. And so that's why nothing, you know, I think it should be evident now that we're not going to get any progress from our federal government. We need a constitutional convention from the people.
I'm just a little cynical as if it can actually work. That's all.
Y'all the same subject on me? I think y'all did.
Pardon?
Because going back to the elitism,
mm-hmm,
and going back to what was just said, how would that constitutional amendment actually change anything?
I could be wrong.
Private caller, your mic is on. I got a new private caller that just called in. You hit the button.
Yeah, we have shape up doing this. I
don't know what happened. Mike, is that you?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, go ahead.
No, I just joined in. I had to leave for a minute, and I wasn't paying attention.
Okay.
Well, what are we discussing?
We've gotten to elitism, white supremacy, and what was it called? Secret societies.
Wow.
We're getting deep today, and you know what the interesting thing is? It seems like we have more agreement that everyone.
Today's
date.
That
Diva?
the people that have spoken, yeah, we have more people agreeing than just yesterday.
Okay, can I give my solution to our country's problems and see if everybody agrees?
Yes,
with
go
it?
Ahead.
I think if you
go
get
ahead.
This one amendment through, this will solve all of our country's problems. Well, nearly all. I say 80% of this country's problems. If you do
okay.
this one thing. You pass an amendment, and I know people are going to hate this. You pass an amendment that you cannot vote on that level of government if you receive at least 25% of your income from the government. Or, like, for instance, if you work for
Alex,
if you work for General GE, if you work for GE. And they're getting all these federal government subsidies, and so if your employment is based on GE continuing to get these government contracts, then you're going to vote for the guy on the federal level who's going to continue that going. But see, and I think that's not liberty,
that means,
though.
That means no teacher can vote. That means nobody that works in the defense industry can vote. That means,
yep.
I understand what you're saying. You're trying.
No, here's a clarification. Though it's not that a teacher can't vote. Because see, what people have a misunderstanding is that the federal government pays for the teachers. No, the teachers
federal money, state money comes in and pays for teachers. It's true.
Every state aids some urban developments, but in general, it's your local taxes that pays for your education.
Alex, that's the craziest thing I've heard yet. I mean, that's the second time I've heard it.
No, it's not.
Yes,
wow.
It is.
No, it's not. No, it's
Alex,
not.
Alex, I
got
to look at
then,
my brown
sure,
Nazi
what,
shirt.
What you're effectively doing,
what I'm saying is you would be denying
people the right to vote, which is...
No, what I'm saying is the teacher wouldn't be able to vote on the local level. They can vote on the state and the federal level, because if their income is being derived
Alex.
Primarily, sort of significantly
Alex.
From the local level, they shouldn't be able to vote themselves
Alex.
more benefits.
Alex,
let me solve all the problems right there. Alex, listen to this.
I want you to understand.
I don't think there's any simple solution.
Brown, I gotta go because we're almost at the end of the day. But listen to this, Alex. Right now, we're having a hard time getting people to understanding the concept that you need to have a driver's license to prove that you are a citizen and that you reside where you say you reside. Not because people don't want you to vote, but because we need to do that. And we see people about to lose their mind up in here over a driver's license, and you want to come in with the don't vote depending on where you work?
Yeah. I mean, same thing with Congress. Like, if Congress gets – if they get any lobbying money, then they can't vote either. So they won't be able to vote on any bill, even if they get money for X number of years. I'm saying you do that across the board. You do it across the board. Anybody that's
Alex,
employed.
Have you noticed that the Congress is not supposed to vote for – they're not supposed to vote for their own raises in their own term? So they vote for the next term, and then they give themselves a raise and get reelected and get their pay increase?
Good, buddy.
Have you seen that? Or as a matter of fact, have you seen where they vote in the Affordable Health Care Act and then they vote so that they don't have to participate in it? Or they have Social Security but they have their own federal pension program? I mean, do you understand what I'm talking about here? So do you really think that's gonna fly?
You will have all the voting right amendments coming back again. You'll have, I mean, you'll have people yelling employment supremacy.
You know, let me keep this really quick.
I think what Alex is trying to say.
Hold on, Brown. Go ahead, Matt.
Just really quick, using the a congressman or a senate or any type of congressional vote as a comparison isn't fair because it's a congressional vote. It's not one of a free people who have that right to vote. That's a whole different story when you're saying that, you know, congressmen have a right to vote on this or don't have or can't because of a rule. That's completely different from your right to vote as an American citizen, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's I mean, you want to talk about the overreach of government? That's an overreach, period, of even thought, Alex.
I don't think so because you can't vote your – we talk about entitlements, but if you're voting yourself more benefit, then that's that undermines the democracy.
Oh, that's so unrealistic.
My God.
I don't think so.
Employment and entitlement supremacist.
Jeez, oh, man.
Give it 2 years, they'll be calling that racism.
That was. That means
No, but what that would do is stimulate the free market because then the companies that aren't receiving benefits from the government would actually be stimulated and the government would shrink because there would be less incentive to go into government or to receive government benefit. There will be less and less incentive to do that.
It's such an overreach. That will stimulate is in high caliber, large magazine ammunition.
Absolutely. You trying to start a war? I'm not trying to start a war.
No, that's not.
I just want people to be educated.
That's common sense, you know.
No, Alex, that's unattainable. Even if they told a convention, they couldn't start that. They might need to abolish the IRS, and they might need to go ahead and every time they have a stimulus package, give it back to the people, and no more giving it to banks. But come on. We have a hard enough time getting them to agree on which bathroom they're going to go to during the break.
I get what Alex is saying. And, I mean, on a level, I agree with it. But there's certain things that, you know, we've talked about on this show, you know, that are along the same lines that we've said no because that's stepping all over the Constitution. And I feel that what you're talking about is doing the same thing.
That would crush the Constitution in its entirety.
No, that's completely constitutional.
The Constitution is pretty bad shape right now.
It's completely constitutional because you shouldn't even be able to lobby in the first place. But lobbying is allowed. But the Constitution allows to withhold certain civil rights if. Say if someone
you're in jail,
you're scared.
Yeah, if you're
You're scary now, Alex. The foundation of the simple foundation of democracy is one man, one vote. And you that's like a pillar of democracy, and you've just smashed that down.
Stepped all over it.
I can't stepped all over it, just smash it. I can't see that ever flying.
But the government was never meant to be the way it is, doling out all these favors to everybody.
Well,
you can't find anybody in the global economy that isn't on the GE payroll. Even the subcontractors, you could be the guy that makes their stationery and envelopes and be owning your own business, but because your money comes from GE, does that mean you can't vote? There'd be nobody left to vote except people receiving, people
except,
in iron
except
lungs
people that do what Alex
disability
does.
Checks. Oh, excuse me. That hospital might receive federal money. Excuse me. They can't vote.
Right.
I mean, yeah.
The government does not see that's the misconception. The government does not have all the money. The money, the people have the money, and they've reversed everybody's thinking that the money comes from the government when it doesn't. The money comes from the people, and that's the problem.
The government has the government has the authority to extract money from the people,
and they do
at the point of a gun,
right?
And they are good at it
every day.
But you can't take their right to vote, Alex.
They don't even need a gun now.
What happens to the guy that bought a GE toaster? Where does he come in? Does he lose his right to vote because he's supporting GE?
No. If your income is at least let's move up to 50%. If 50% of your income comes from a certain level of government, then you can't vote on that level of government.
What if you have no
income? Simple as that.
What if you have no income? What if you're retired? What if you're a student?
If your income isn't coming from the government, then you can still vote. That doesn't
matter.
What
about retirees who paid into Social Security if that's their income?
That's not from the government. That's not that they
paid
into.
Yes, it's the government.
No.
Get a government check. They get a government check.
Social Security is something
that
they paid into.
I don't know if the government, but when you don't get it, you call a governmental agency to see what the heck happened to your check.
And they put you on hold.
And then you just talk to some of the other people we've been talking about.
A check from
today.
The Treasury,
yeah,
a government check. I don't know how that can fly, but I wish you well in your pursuit of implementing it.
Well, guess what? Tomorrow we'll be back here again doing the same thing at the same time, 12 noon.
Alex,
we want to have you back with us. You've been listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSLM AM 600. The number again is 347-945-5229. I want you guys to have a wonderful day today. God bless you. Thank you, all the callers, all the conversation, all of the input. It's really been a blessing having you on. We'll see you tomorrow, and have a wonderful afternoon.
It is simply false. We don't want to blow up the cafe.
Hey, I'm not that bad. Please don't kill me.
He will not kill you.
Are you going to drop a missile on Jane Fonda?
No, he will not bomb Jane Fonda.
Americans could be killed by drones.
Calm down, sir.
Are you a robot? You're bad at night.